Steve, thanks. A welcome back to Wendy Snyder, who is not here for yesterday's presentation. Welcome back.
Thank you. I had an emergency cobbler incident. I needed to find a cobbler.
Mm-hmm.
Had to get my boots resold.
That was my guess, was that somehow footwear was involved in your absence.
Can they stretch boots? Can a cobbler stretch boots?
Cobblers can do anything.
Really?
Cobblers work miracles.
Can they add an extra hole in a belt?
Yeah.
Or could I just use an ice pick?
They got a belt punch. They can.
You know what a belt punch is?
I know what a belt punch is. This isn't my first rodeo.
Look out, Saul's Weedle.
All throughout the show, I kept saying that you were not here, and then I got a text from somebody who, like, I kept saying at every break, Wendy's not here, and then I got a text, where's Wendy? And I knew that you weren't here, and then somebody finally said on the text, we get it. She's not there. You don't have to tell us. We can tell by the fact that she's not talking that she's not there.
Right. Probably your best show ever. Did you get that text?
Top five. I would say top five. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I'm sure everyone's aware of this, and they were certainly talking about it with Steve during the crosstalk there, that Donald Trump will not be attending the final debate before Iowa.
Because of Megyn Kelly, pretty much?
He maintains that the questioning that she uses on him or had used on him in the past is not good.
He says this?
Yeah, she's asked him questions about being sexist and a misogynist and on and on and on. And questions that I think...
Valid questions?
No, I think I think that's a very valid question.
They're extremely
Absolutely.
Valid
but
questions.
I think then she said some things in post interviews or things like that that he might have taken exception to, too.
So he's a big fat baby and is not going because someone makes him uncomfortable. Is that a quality you want in a president?
Well, the other thing, he's all about wins and losses and ratings, right?
Right.
So he's saying, look, Fox, you're going to make a gazillion dollars off of me being at this debate tomorrow. And when he was hinting that he might not show up, Fox puts out this statement, a really snarky statement, which I guess they do, belittling him, saying, you know, that Trump wouldn't go and meet with Putin or the Ayatollah
right.
unless his Twitter users approved of the idea and things like that. I mean, it was just an unprofessional statement from Fox, and that's when he pulled the trigger.
It does seem weird that Fox would do that. Like, I could see a person doing that.
Right.
Even Megyn Kelly, in a way. But, yeah,
but
Fox.
But not the network
themselves.
Yeah,
it seems weird. But it seems accurate. You can't just take your podium and go home, can you?
I don't remember anything. Steve, you tell me, because I was in my head, I was trying to go through this and trying to remember if anything similar to this had ever happened where a candidate in a situation like this could say point blank, I don't like somebody I'm working for you and what we've done in the past, so I'm just not playing.
The comparison has been to Ronald Reagan in Nashua, New Hampshire in 1980, when there was a debate set up and the agreement was, according to the setup, it was going to be just George Bush and Ronald Reagan. And Reagan wanted the other candidates, Bob Dole and others, to participate in that debate. And it was an uncomfortable thing, as I recall it. The extras showed up.
Mm-hmm.
George Bush is on the stage. John Meacham writes about this in his new book, but is on the stage sort of looking straight ahead, saying, no, it's just me and Ron, just me and Ron. And Ronald Reagan says, I paid for this microphone. And that's when, you know, they sort of shut it off.
Yeah.
So it's compared to that. But I think what's overlooked in the 80s situation was it was to Reagan's benefit to have those also on there, because he didn't want it to be a one-on-one against George Bush. So
interesting.
It wasn't like, I mean, the legend is that he was being this hero looking up for the little guys. I think it was a political tactic. Now, this one, I'm not sure what the benefit is. I mean, his voters are Fox viewers, and he's taking himself out of that. And even though I think Fox has a lot to, is responsible for it in many ways, he's looking a little petulant, too.
But he's making the Fox viewers choose him over Fox. He's winning, again, to borrow a term from Charlie Sheen.
It's the strangest thing in the world, because if you look at the beats that have gone through this whole campaign and will continue to go through, you just go, you're doing everything wrong, and yet it keeps benefiting him over and over and over again.
Is this like a person who wants to get out of a relationship and they keep screwing up and they keep, because just leave me. You know, just divorce me. It seems like he's just doing these things so people won't support him anymore. And, you know, saying the craziest stuff about, you know, you can just shoot anyone.
Right.
And people will still follow me. Right. He's even shocked they're behind him after saying that.
You've not been watching those make people support him more.
I know. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like he's trying to go, you guys, distance yourself from me.
I don't know the name of his campaign manager. Do either of you? I don't know
who. I think it's Chris Lewandowski.
Is that who it is?
His name, yeah.
All right. So isn't it his job at some point to say, Donald, look, I understand the point you're trying to make. You're not thrilled with the past with Megyn Kelly. However, this is a huge event. This is voters' last chance to see you debate these guys before a very, very key day in Iowa. We really need you there. We need you to buck up, and we need you to get on the stage and do your best. Why is that not happening?
Well, I just said it makes him look a little petulant, but I also think it's going to be a win for him because people probably aren't going to watch the debate as much. Had he had a terrible night, that might have hurt him. I don't think he can help himself too much more.
So he can now use these numbers when the TV ratings come through and this is a lower-rated debate.
Right.
He can say, see how the rest of the party does when I'm not there.
He's going to host another event apparently simultaneously that will raise money for veterans. So he's, you know, he can wear that.
That's actually a good move, I have to say.
It's a shrewd move.
It is.
It's using the veterans. I mean, they're going to get something out of it, too. But, man, it's genius.
Breaking news. This just in from a texter, if I may. Governor Romner will not be attending today's State of the State address
at
noon.
He heard Michael Madigan was going to be there.
Doesn't get along with him. So he's doing something about it.
Oh, interesting. Shall we take a quick break and take a phone call?
Yeah, calls are coming in. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to comment on this or anything during the show. That's how you call us or text us. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, so Donald Trump, if you're just joining us, Donald Trump has decided that he will not be attending, he will not be participating in the final GOP debate before Iowa because he doesn't exactly see eye to eye with the moderator Megyn Kelly over at Fox News. So he has decided he will not be playing.
That just is so wrong on so many levels.
I know it is. I know it is. But it perfectly illustrates his mindset. You know, if it doesn't go my way, then we're not playing.
But there are people hearing and watching and thinking, saying, that's how I want my president. He's not going to put up with crap from anybody.
I guess so. I guess it does.
Dave, what do you think about all this? Thanks for calling.
I am going to try to be as succinct as possible. Please bear with me a little bit, okay?
Yep.
It finally sank into my thick skull last night that what we are watching is Donald Trump ignoring what he signed off on at the start of the candidacy of not running into a third or not running a third party situation in the run for the president. But what we're actually seeing is Donald Trump running as a third party, running on the back of the Republican Party. Look at the difference between how much space there is between Trump's numbers and the numbers of the rest of the guys that are professing to be Republicans. And I think that's where the line is drawn. He's having a heyday. And he's being a genius about it in that aspect, as far as I can see. I do not like the man. I do not want to see him as president. But I think in reality, what we're looking at is him using the Republican Party as a base for running a third party, but using their name and destroying them in the process.
But if that's true, and it's a great theory, wouldn't there be enough Republicans, and I think this is the case, I'm positive this is the case, there's enough Republicans that are either already alienated or becoming alienated with him to say, all right, I'm a Republican, I can't listen to this. That's not the guy I want representing me.
I think that what we're going to see is those Republicans of which you speak, of which I understand are there, and I think everybody else does, are going to finally turn around and say, this is not the Republican Party, this is the Republican Party, and Trump is not going to get it. You know, they're going to wake up when they go and close the drapes and walk in the vote and say, no, no. And there are those that have him so aligned with how they think and how their hatred is of anybody else that doesn't agree with what Trump is saying. And he's not produced any viable solutions to what he thinks are the wrongs of the country. He just keeps saying, we're going to make America great again. How? With what? And when?
Dave,
so he's actually running with... Go ahead.
No. I was just saying, you know, I want you in on this because Bill and I just got a text from someone that I think explains everything. Trump is like Richard Pryor and Brewster's Millions running an election campaign saying, don't vote for me, and then they do.
Mm-hmm.
It's similar. Yeah.
Thanks for your insight. We really appreciate it, Dave. I don't know what the answers are, but maybe Bob does. What do you think, Bob?
Okay, I guess where I'm coming from is, I'll bet if Romney had it to do over again, he'd want somebody other than Candy moderating, because Trump's probably figuring that he's going to not only be against the other candidates, he's going to be against Megyn Kelly. And we all know that there's nothing worse than the wrath of a woman, and she'll get a revenge on him. And it's a lose-lose situation for him. Now he's in a win-win situation.
Yeah,
everybody's
but you can't just
about him.
Pick and choose. You're right, everybody's talking about him. But, you know, people go to work every day and don't like their bosses. There's always the man, or in this case, the woman, that you're not going to like. And you can't just take your ball and go home.
But then is she going to be fair to him? Probably not. She's a very intelligent, very articulate person, as he's not too bad.
Yeah.
But it's a lose-lose situation for him, and I see why going up against a stacked deck?
Bob, how good could he look, though? Couldn't he turn this into, he could go up there and say at some point early in the debate, hey, Megyn Kelly, you and I have had our differences in the past, but that aside, and he could make a beautiful moment out of it and really win people over.
He doesn't want a beautiful moment, and that would show weakness in his eyes, I think.
You guys are talking about, like, true Democrats. Nobody wants to go up against a stacked deck. Six against one is not good odds.
But some of us have to go up against a stacked deck every day. It's part of life. You can't just bail.
You can't. But you can choose your fights.
I guess.
And sometimes it's better off to retreat a little bit and then come back at it much stronger than... I'm not a real good fan of Trump's. I think he's much better than Hillary. But I wish there were somebody else running rather than those two.
I bet that statement has been uttered by many a person.
Oh, tell me about it.
That statement's uttered at every election, every time.
Yeah, I know, but this time I mean it.
That's true. But like I say, I bet Romney, if he had his choice to do over again, he would have made a different decision on a monitor. And they should have. You know, it cost him the election. I feel it cost him election. But, you know, we'll just have to let the chips fall where they may. Trump's proven to be a pretty good tactician. As it shows now, for whatever reason, he shouldn't be up number one, but he is.
Well, thank you for your thoughts, because
maybe he'd make a good president, much better than we have right now.
Okay, well, thank you, Bob, in your opinion.
I have a quick question for Steve, if he's there. Steve, are you available for questions?
I am for you, Bill.
All right, thank you so much. All right, I read this a couple weeks ago, and I don't fully understand it, but according to this article I read, there's a possibility, there's a way that at the Republican National Convention, let's say enough states go for Trump, he's the leader and stuff like that, somehow the Republican Party has a way to decide otherwise. Is that true? Could the higher-ups at the Republican Party at the convention, even after all the states have declared and Trump is the leader, could they say, no, you know what, we're going to give it to Ted Cruz, we're going to give it to Marco Rubio. Is that a possibility?
Well, I don't know, Bill. I mean, presumably the people who are elected as delegates and going there are the party leaders.
I mean,
there's not a, you know, so they would have a vote in it. So whether they all, I don't know that they're all obligated to vote for the person for whom they're elected on the
first
ballot or not.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know that they've been looking at the idea of a brokered convention or things like that. I mean, I'm sure there's some wiggle room somewhere, but you know, if you've got Donald Trump going into the convention with 60% of the delegates,
they would go that way.
I think it'd be pretty hard to undo it.
All right.
All right, 224 says, again, you are uninformed or you just don't understand. Megyn Kelly is biased and should not be a debate moderator. Stick to comedy. You don't understand politics. Can I flat out say, I really don't,
I
and
don't
I
either.
Don't care about it. But it involves me, and there are a lot of people that don't understand it and are trying to make some sense of this.
Nobody can understand. It's impossible to understand what has happened.
It's, to quote the great Wallace Shawn, it's unfathomable.
It's inconceivable.
708, when will you, I can't say this Jay swear word, what would you Jays do when he gets in?
Scream.
Well,
scream
you know
for
what?
4 years.
I will be astounded that people voted him in. And again, I support the office of president and I'm not moving, so I will deal with it. But I won't be happy.
I've said this before.
And I'm not going to go blame Trump.
When George W. Bush was the president for 8 years, for eight long years, I was astounded
really
every
long.
Single day. I couldn't believe it every single day. I believe the situation would be worse. I really do.
But, that's why we have a voice to vote. And here's something interesting, too. As our choice to vote is out there, 815 says, what I think I'm hearing on the radio is a bunch of Democrats explaining the Republican point of view or position. It's like a man explaining why childbirth is not that big of a deal. Here's one Republican's point of view. I'm not really happy with Trump, but if the alternative is Hillary, I'm voting for Trump.
Right. Okay, that makes perfect sense, but that's not where we are. The alternative right now is not Hillary.
Right. Right.
There are 6 or 7 or 1.9 other alternatives for the Republicans to choose, and they are choosing Trump.
And it is, as we've pointed out, confusing to us. It really is. It doesn't make a shred of sense. If you go through the paces of what Donald Trump has said and done over the past several months, anybody that knows anything about politics, and those of us who don't know much about politics, are just shaking our heads going, that's impossible.
Remember when Mitt Romney said essentially, you know, he talked about the 41% who want their government handoffs, or handouts, that sunk him.
That was the end.
Donald Trump is killing people in Manhattan.
I know.
And he's getting more support.
Winning.
Yeah, it's everything is upside down.
847, and this is pretty perfect. If people think Trump can't get elected, they should just look at Rauner. And if Trump thinks he can quickly change a dysfunctional system, he should look at Rauner.
That's a good point. That is a very good point.
We're in this together, and exercise your right to vote. Rock the vote, baby. That's what you got to do. But really, it's just every day is something new that I go, what?
Mm-hmm. I know. All right, let's do this. A quick break. Thanks for everybody for your calls and your texts. A quick break. Steve with the news and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I'm about to hear something that's going to upset me.
You're not going to like this. Like,
you know, God,
you are not going to like this at all.
What is wrong with this world?
Amy Schumer is one of the fastest rising comics on the comic landscape. She's had an incredible year. Very funny movie. Terrific TV show. Her stand-up is fantastic.
I feel a big butt coming, and I'm not talking about hers.
A week ago.
She doesn't have a big butt.
So anyway, Bill.
What? I feel a big butt coming.
There is. Single T. a week ago, three comics, and this came by way of the tweet, which is a very popular way of conversing with other people.
And bringing someone down.
Yep, on the tweet. Three different comics of some renown. You had Kathleen Madigan, you had Wendy Liebman, you had Tammy Pescatelli.
Which I have to jump in. I had never heard of any of those people, really. I know you're in the comedy world, so you knew some of them.
I used to work with Kathleen Madigan. She's from Wisconsin. Very, very funny. I've interviewed Wendy Liebman, also very funny. She works all over the place. Tammy Pescatelli, I've seen on television, but I don't know.
And we're going to have
her. You're going to have her next Friday.
Yeah, she's coming in the studio next Friday.
And I love female comics.
Yep.
I do.
Yep.
And I really drank the Kool-Aid with Amy Schumer.
Well, just don't stop drinking it. Just put it aside for a second. Just put the Kool-Aid on the side for just a little bit. All three comics noticed that they had something in common. They all had some material that had been, quote unquote, lifted, borrowed,
repurposed,
upcycled by Amy Schumer.
Which I found shocking because it really, just for a person who sees that in the news, and we talked about it, I don't know these three other women.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking they have some bitterness maybe that she's making it because you know what? it's a man's world.
Right. Agreed.
So at first, that's what I thought, and I still might think that.
Now, we wanted to present to you some evidence of this. There was audio online of the three women's acts and jokes. So what you would hear is one of their jokes from 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago, and then Amy Schumer's joke. And you could compare the similarity if you chose to. And there was a fourth comic, Patrice O'Neill, who sadly died a couple years ago. Patrice is a guy. Also in that same bracket of having material that you would hear either his or one of the women who I just told you about. You'd hear their joke or their material, and then you'd hear Amy's, and you could decide for yourself. So Kevin and I found it one night. I brought it in. I said to Kevin, let's get this on the show. And then somehow, despite the fact that the internet, I guess the internet is all over the world now, from what I'm hearing.
Really?
Worldwide. Somebody snatched it down. It was no longer available on the internet. You couldn't find it anywhere, which I didn't think you could do.
Oh, yeah. Whoever posted it can take it down.
It was gone.
Someone else found it later doing more searching, but from the original site.
Right.
And there was a brief update that one of the women was saying, I never really said she stole my material. I tweeted that something like, it was funnier when I said it. So in a way, that is saying that she stole the material.
It's a more clever way of saying somebody took my stuff. All right. This morning, we find other comics, several other comics, have a similar situation.
Really?
Mark Maron, who does a podcast called WTF. John Mulaney, who was a writer on Saturday Night Live and a stand-up on his own, had his own television show on Fox for a little while last year. I'm trying to remember who else. Who else, Kevin? Do you remember the names?
I don't remember for sure, but there was an SNL skit with... Was it Keegan Michael Key?
Was it funny?
Can you believe Amy Schumer is bold enough to steal from them? After all the Muskegee Airmen have been through, now they've got this going on, Wendy. The Tuskegee Airmen. Well, that's all right. they've had a terrible couple of decades, and now they've got Amy Schumer stealing from them. All right. Here's what we'll do. We're going to play for you a little bit of the audio of some of these comics, and we'll go back and forth. And Amy Schumer is still defending herself. She was just on the Jim Norton show just saying, please, I'm not stealing.
That after these three women came forward and Patrice, the man,
right.
who's no longer with us. He was mentioned in the stealing.
Yes.
And she went on and said, you know, I didn't. I would never do that. But has she responded to these new
things? I don't know the timeline, Kevin. Has she responded to the new accusations?
Not that I've heard. This is pretty new from my understanding.
I don't think she has.
Because here's my thought, and we can take a break before we play audio. Right. I honestly felt that, you know, sometimes you're way funnier than I am, but there are some times that we say things and we're the Doublemint twins at the exact same time.
Agreed.
And sometimes it's identical, sometimes it's different, but the same.
Right.
So I really chalk that up to, you know, people that write jokes or use jokes for a living sometimes might have overlap.
There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt about that. But when you hear the audio, you'll hear the same beats. Like, you'll hear the setup is similar, slightly different, but not real different. Then you'll hear the punchline. Then you'll hear like a strange twist on it. You'll hear over and over again a pattern. And I'm not accusing her. I agree. I mean, you're mining the same field.
Right.
So I get that, but there's a lot of these incidents popping up lately.
And in the audio that was taken down off the internet, wasn't there something like a food slapper, or there was like a term that was used?
We found that. We have that.
Because that, to me, you know, that's...
Right, that's such a strange thing to think of, right? And a lot of these are. You'll go, boy, that's a real weird thing for two different people to think of. So here's what we'll do. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll play the audio of her defending herself, the original comedians, and then Amy Schumer's version, and you can decide for yourself. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, here's the question. Is Amy Schumer, one of America's most popular comics at this point, is she stealing material? She's stealing jokes from other comics. A week ago, a video materialized on the internet where they would illustrate, as best they could, jokes that other comics had done for years, and then Amy Schumer's versions, extremely similar. That video disappeared from the internet. Now a new one has surfaced with even more comics, and you're going to hear some of them. Kyle Cease, John Mulaney, Mark Maron. You'll hear a sketch from Mad TV from years ago, and then a sketch from the Amy Schumer show, which is eerily similar. So you tell me what you think. Here's a little bit of that audio.
I'm being accused of stealing jokes, and I wanted to come and talk to you about it and clear my name, because I would never ever do that, and I never have.
Maybe I'm old fashioned, but I like it when the guy pays for sex. I mean that.
I'm very old school. I think the guy should always pay on the first date for sex. And
blacking out is when you drink so much that your brain goes to sleep, but your body gets all Eye of the Tiger and soldiers on.
And I black out when I drink. Isn't that the worst? No, your mind goes to sleep, but your body's like, tonight is my night.
I performed a lot of private schools, I was telling you, a lot of religious schools. I wonder what goes on with religion. I never knew what to believe with that. I don't ever know what the Virgin Mary story, you know what I mean? Did God and Virgin Mary make Jesus? And I think the reason we don't know on that is because we didn't have Mari Povich back then doing the paternity test. And that would have been a fantastic episode, wouldn't it? Just Mari Povich and Virgin Mary sitting there.
I think that that would be the best ever Mari Povich baby daddy show. Don't you? Can you imagine how amazing that would be? I think he can do it. He's got the power. Like, half the crowd would be priests, half rabbis, and the panels, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph.
I just want to preface this next bit here. It's a little confusing. It's going to be the Mad TV bit first, then Amy, then Mad TV and Amy, and so on and so on.
And let me explain what you're seeing in this bit. You're seeing a shopper in a store being helped by a member of the staff who happens to be African-American, and how they deal with it. It's a white person being helped by an African-American. You'll hear it.
How's this?
Oh, that's perfect.
They can ring you up right over there.
Thanks so much.
Sure. Okay, I'm Bengi. If you need any other sizes, you please let me know, all right?
Okay.
There you go.
Hi, how you doing?
Great.
All right, did somebody help you with this?
Yeah, she's right over... Oh, she's not there.
Hi, how are you? Did someone help you today?
Yeah, who was it?
You know, I don't see him.
Oh, that's okay. What does she look like?
She's... dark hair. She was wearing a blazer.
Oh, yeah, all the girls are wearing blazers.
Do you know what he looks like?
Yeah, he is wearing like a vest, or like a plaid shirt, I feel like.
I don't know what everyone who works here wore today.
He had short hair, so that'll probably do it. Just that. Black eyes?
He has black eyes?
Yeah, he had black eyes.
If she had a favorite president, it would probably be Lincoln.
That's just confusing.
Yeah. Are there any other distinguishing features?
I would guess he probably voted for Obama. I know I did.
What?
You know me. I'm so like, is this anyone's bit? Like, I have to come up with so much material. And my TV show, this movie, stand-ups. But like, I'm so careful. And none of these things had ever reached me.
All right, so that is her at the end explaining the fact that she has to come up with a lot of material. She can't see everybody's act. She can't see every TV show that's out there. But you have to admit, you heard three or four jokes, and you heard a scene from Mad TV and then from her own show that were eerily similar. Something's going on, isn't it?
I still feel like the Mari Povich joke I've heard from... everybody said,
yeah,
whenever paternity's in question.
But not the angle of it being the Holy Family,
yeah,
and that they should be sitting on Mari Povich's show doing the Who's the Baby Daddy.
That one's the most damning to me, I think. It's just so spot on and similar.
It's really close.
It's almost identical, but I'm just thinking, you know, I could see somebody coming up with that, a Catholic coming up with that.
Yeah.
You're thinking, because, you know, I'm thinking, I don't know the whole story of the Virgin Mary. If she's a virgin, I don't get
it.
And who's the person you think of all the time for paternity tests?
And mind you, this was actually about 12 minutes in the video that I had to cut down. Some of it wasn't appropriate.
Oh, there's a bunch of stuff. Kevin and I were going through it. Most of the stuff that is the most condemning is sadly
dirty.
A little bit too much for the show, so we couldn't run it. But
what bothers me the most is there was a guy quoted, you know, blacking out. It's when your mind goes to sleep, but your body's like Eye of the Tiger. Jim Peterick should be all over this.
He should be.
I mean, yeah.
He should be.
But he's lifting from Jim Peterick.
But that same joke is that your mind just goes to a real high energized song, and it's a different song. It's an updated song, but it's the same kind of. And again, there's a lot of things going on in the world, and there's a lot of people commenting. So some people are going to have a similar point of view. But boy, there's a lot of them piling up all of a sudden.
Question.
Yes.
If I may do my Dwight Schrute impersonation.
Please do.
Question.
Yes.
Doesn't her sister write a lot of her stuff?
Answer, yes, her sister does. It's her head writer is her sister.
So maybe it's not Amy?
She could be stealing from John Mulaney's sister and Mark Maron's sister and Kyle Cease's sister and Wendy Liebman's sister.
Wouldn't that be terrible, though, if the sister is the thief?
Well,
yes.
and Amy's getting blamed for it. Another thing, you know, when Trainwreck came out and that shooting happened, I felt really sorry for Amy Schumer that it happened to be her movie that was remembered like that. So what if it is her sister doing it and she's, you know, I have never heard those jokes before. So, you know, my sister's pretty funny. If she wrote me some stand-up and I went to Zany's for a couple of shows for open mic night and did it.
I think your sister was trying to get you. I think Betsy was trying to go.
Well, she would be.
I know how to fix Wendy. I'll just give her all stolen material.
But see, I would trust her. That's the difference between she and I.
I know.
Or she and me.
I know. All valid points, all valid questions.
But very suspect, Bill.
And I'm going to say this. I did stand up for 10 years. There were guys that were just out and out thieves. There were guys who did this who just didn't care. They would work with you somewhere, and then the next week they would be stealing a bunch of your stuff. That's how it worked. There were also guys out there who just didn't have the capacity to realize that what they were doing was stealing stuff. You know, their minds just worked in a different way where they're like, I could do something like that, I guess. It
All
didn't
right.
make it right.
Second half of the show, we're pretty busy the rest of this show, but second half of the show, I found something on mentalfloss.com, and these are some comedians that have been accused of plagiarism that we all know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you're aware of these cases, but let's do that later on.
All right.
To me, it's like that her star should be falling now.
I don't
care how funny she is.
I don't want that.
Well, I know you don't want that, but see now, all right, here's the difference. And we're going to talk to one of the female comedians on next Friday
Tammy
about
Pescatelli
this.
Will be in studio with us next week.
You don't want that, but it sure seems like the women who brought this forward at the beginning might want that.
True. Here's one of the main reasons I don't want that. She's really good. She is. Amy Schumer does a great job on stage. She hosted Saturday Night Live. She had a great movie. She's got a great TV show. There's this argument that's been going on forever and ever and ever about women don't have the capacity to be funny, and it couldn't be more wrong. And she's one of the people that illustrates that every day, that she's hysterically funny.
She really is. But if she's lifting stuff from other people.
Right.
I know. Then it comes to, well, her delivery's funny.
Yeah.
Her personality's funny.
I know.
But part of being funny is coming up with the stuff yourself.
Ideally, yes.
No.
That's what you want. Believe me. I mean, I told you stories. I used to get ripped off all the time, and I hated it. It's like, wait, it took me a while to think of that and write that and make that work. You can't just come in and see it and steal it. That's not right.
It's not right. So you of all people should be against this.
Right.
John, we only have like 30 seconds, but you have a great question.
Yeah, you know, you always hear singers that are patenting their songs. I wonder if comedians ever patent routine.
Or copyright it.
I don't know any stand-up comic that's ever been able to do that successfully.
Why not, though?
I don't know.
Your material.
Right.
Although, I'll tell you, John, with the internet, anybody can rip anybody off now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
Great question.
Going back even to, you know, the big, long Bill Cosby, not to mention his name, but he had some great routines back in the day.
Sure.
Pat Albert and all that stuff, but nobody ever did it, huh? Interesting.
There was a guy I used to work with who used to say all the time when he would write something that he would write it, type it out, and then send it to himself, and he would keep it in an envelope in his apartment just
in case. To show that it came through a federal place, but that doesn't really work.
I don't know if it matters. Yeah.
Thank you, John. Great question.
All right.
She should be shamed.
Yeah. Maybe.
I mean,
I know.
But this, my question, I guess, is with all this coming to the forefront, even if it's true, will her star fall? Probably not.
I don't think so.
It should.
I think it's funny, Bill, that you're pointing it out, but don't want her to suffer for it.
It's so strange because when I was doing clubs and there were guys, there was a guy I used to work with at Zany's and he would steal all the time. And I'd say to the guys who ran Zany's, please stop hiring him because I don't want to work with him. And I know there's other comics.
Because then people hear you do it and think you're stealing from him.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which is so not cool.
I know.
That's why something has to happen here.
Well, we'll see what happens. And we'll talk to Tammy, like you said. She's going to be on the show next week. She's one of the comics who has incredibly similar material. So we'll get her take on it in a week.
Interesting.
Yeah. All right. We'll take a break. The news is coming up next. Steve has the news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Courtney Hole. I love her.
Courtney Love.
I know her band was Hole.
Yes. The reason for the song is that it is Chocolate Cake Day. It's the reason so many federal buildings are closed today and the kids do not have school. It's Chocolate
Cake Day.
What's
on your show schedule?
There's no mail.
That would be chocolate cake. It's Chocolate Cake Day. So I put some on my schedule to remind me of that. We'll talk about all the good things that go along with Chocolate Cake Day in just a little bit, but I need to tell you that Hannah and Dane are here from Flavor HD.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of them.
Yeah, they're very popular.
Yes.
There's a restaurant concept across the street at the Nordstrom building that fascinates me, and I don't know if this is a new trend or what it is. There was a restaurant up there in the food court that went out of business. So instead of just leaving that space open and blank, what they do is every day, it's a different restaurant. It's a restaurant from somewhere around Chicago that comes in, sets up for the day.
Pop-up.
A pop-up restaurant, and it's fantastic.
Now, the name of this concept, it should be like Indecision.
You know, Indecision.
Something kind of clever like that. I love the – when you came in and told me about it, and the fact that the name of it, or even just the fact that you can get your head around the whole thing is so elusive. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, what's the name, Bill? Like, I don't know. Maybe they changed that.
It's so,
every day. Too.
It's like an exclusive club that I normally would not be allowed to go to, but I'm allowed in on this one. So what they do is they post as you walk up to it. There's a huge menu in the front at the very beginning, and then they make maybe six or seven of their best dishes or their most easily traveled dishes. And then they bring whatever drinks are indigenous to, you know, like sometimes if it's a Mexican restaurant, it'll be either Mexican beer or that
margaritas.
Soda. Yeah, sometimes.
They have liquor?
Yeah, sometimes. It depends on what the restaurant is.
Everything is sometimes,
Wendy. Well, yeah, because it would depend on the owner's license.
You never know.
Right.
Okay.
Right. But I love this because more days than not, you know, especially because it's a food court, you're used to the same six or seven. And every day it's a mystery. It's fantastic.
And every day I look at what he brings back and I'm like, what is that? And oh, it's jerk chicken.
And it's
oh,
good.
It's Wow Bow.
No, it's really good.
What do you love most of it? Because you are, if nothing else, a variety is the spice of life guy. Do you love just that whole Russian roulette of eating? Like, I have no idea.
I love not knowing because I believe I could ask somebody who works there to give me a schedule of what's coming up. I don't want to know. I want to be surprised every day. And more days than not, I think I've only turned it down once or twice and gone with it six or seven times in the last few weeks. It's great.
What'd you turn down? You don't have to give the brand of it, but what was it?
One of the times I turned down Thai food because I had Thai food for dinner the night before.
Okay.
And another time I turned it down because it was a food that was a strange color. And even though it probably tasted good, I went, food shouldn't be that color.
Blue?
He
ate blue food.
It was more of a yellowish orange that didn't look like it was. It wasn't.
It
wasn't something I
wanted.
The
name of the restaurant was Bile.
Right, right. So
it was Bile Duck. D-U-C-K.
So even though that sounds delicious, there was one or two days where I said no, thank you. But shouldn't places experiment with this? This is a great idea.
It really depends on the size and breadth of the kitchen. Because, I mean, if you've got a space and you've got people that are willing to come in and do it, mm-hmm. food court-y type size spaces, that makes better sense.
Mm-hmm.
Is it prepared? Do they bring it prepared?
I can't figure that part of it out.
There's a curtain. They're behind it. I don't know.
Right. There's some things that I'm not ready to see.
I didn't think they went back there and cooked because that seems like it would be very hard
to
change up every
day. My guess is if the restaurant is close enough, what they do is they probably prepare it at the restaurant and then bring it out like they do at a food fair. But like the day Wendy said, one day last week it was Jamaican food and I got jerk chicken and I got plantains and there's a grapefruit soda called Ting that is very hard to find in the United States.
Everything gonna be all right.
Everything gonna be good, man. So I had all that and I loved it.
He was a happy little camper.
Oh, was I happy.
The pop-up thing is really, really, I love the concept. And I think it's the kind of thing that could work almost anywhere, in any location that was relatively convenient.
Yeah.
Right? This is in a place where a lot of people are. I think it's got some upsides on the restaurant side, because let's say you really love that jerk chicken and maybe an ice cold ting.
Yes.
And you're thinking, well, I'd like to get this tomorrow, but they won't be back for weeks, if ever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to head out there. And I think, too, is even though it's a mystery for you and maybe me and the other diners, they probably give the restaurants a heads up. Maybe it's in the morning.
Probably.
Hey, can you show up here?
Right.
And so maybe they plan for it, because the pop-ups are big and restaurants can mobilize for
that.
And that's the other thing, too. Our friends with Toasty Cheese, and they have two trucks now for Toasty Cheese, which is obviously food trucks and located mostly in the suburbs. But now in Schaumburg, they have a not-so-mobile eatery.
Mm-hmm.
But what is special about this space is that half of it is rental space. So people can come in 24 hours a day and rent that equipment.
Really?
Yeah. So
what's the not-so-mobile? Is it in a double-wide?
It's an actual store.
Oh.
It's an actual, it's in a strip mall type area.
Gotcha.
Went to the opening. It's great. You get all the grilled cheese that you know and love from Toasty Cheese. But what I love is the fact that they have this ability for kitchens and like, let's say, bakers who can't do it out of their house because there's codes that don't allow them that. They're able to rent that space, and they've got the racks, and they have the ovens, and they have the fryers. So you can create your product get it out there. So this is similar in that you have the space and the equipment that's already available and paid for, and then all you need to do is bring it in and utilize it.
But on a daily basis, that would be, I mean, I think a grilled cheese restaurant would be great. Now, do they have at this place, Bill, a suggestion box where, let's say, you go there, you try something, like, oh, this would be great for this, you know, Peruvian restaurant I know, where you can suggest that stuff?
I've not seen that. I would imagine if I had the wherewithal to talk to somebody in management, something like that could happen. But here's what I've noticed in the weeks that they've been doing this. The number of people keeps increasing every week, so more and more people are savvy to it and liking it.
And it changes every single day.
Every day.
And you know how crowded it's going to be now that you've mentioned it? So you've screwed yourself.
And plus, there's rats everywhere.
It's like lower it's like Lower Wacker. We don't talk about Lower Wacker.
Yeah.
It's a secret just for those of us who know.
Mm-hmm. As a comedian, you'll know this, Bill. Is there the equivalent of, like, Johnny Carson motioning you to come over to the couch? Like, let's say it's really going good, and the manager of the space says, hey, you know what? This is kind of, why don't you want to hang around tomorrow?
Do this a little more often?
Right.
I don't know if they set that in advance, if they say, hey, we've got,
like,
certain
QVC,
restaurants.
Like, if this works, we'll do it again.
I have no idea. I just know, like, all of a sudden, because there's tons of good restaurants in the city, but I'm drawn to this every day. Like, wow, what's it going to be? It's a mystery.
It's the surprise.
Yeah.
Spinning the wheel on Price is Right. You
and
don't know what
you're
going to get.
There's not been a single day where the food, I told you, there were 2 days that I abstained.
You passed,
but
yeah.
But every other day that I've had it, every day, the food's been great.
Are these restaurants that you would then seek out?
Yeah, I would.
Well,
I
see, then something's
would.
Doing, they're doing something.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a true testament, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
He's like a little boy walking down the street with his cute little lunchbox when he comes
skips.
Back.
Mm-hmm.
He does.
Sometimes
yeah.
I do.
Yep.
It's nice.
Mm-hmm. All right, it's chocolate cake day. We will get into that.
Woo-hoo-hoo!
And we want to talk a little bit about, I guess, restaurant week is winding up probably tomorrow or
no isn't
next
it always?
February 4th. Next Thursday.
Oh, it's coming up?
And maybe
I thought
it's
it was
still it's like a 2 week restaurant.
Oh,
week.
All right, good.
Yeah.
So we can talk about that a little bit too. Hannah and Dana here from Flavor HD, back after this. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Sugar. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder.
Chocolate cake.
Along with Hannah and Dane from Flavor HD. It's funny you mentioned chocolate cake, Wendy, because it is chocolate cake day.
The studio smells of chocolate.
It's very pleasant. And you've brought in a delicious chocolate cake from Portillo's.
In my opinion, the best chocolate cake anywhere.
What did I say when Kevin brought up it's chocolate cake day? I said, there better be a Portillo's chocolate cake somewhere around these here
and
parts.
It is.
I went through the drive-thru, the one over here on Ontario, and I ordered a chocolate cake at 10 a.m. I was the second person in the drive-thru line.
Mm.
I did. I paid for it with my own money. This
I think
is not
Larry
free
Wirtz was in front of you because he was on Windy City Live with a Portillo's chocolate cake.
Yeah. They probably got it delivered. I had to pay for it.
But did you hear some of the questions they were talking with Dick Portillo? It's like, oh, you wanted to make your name in hot dogs and beefs, but again, and unfortunately, you're so known and only for chocolate cake. And then mm-hmm. he's like, that's my grandma's recipe. Or is it his mom? I can't remember.
I don't know.
Somebody
but,
in that family was
making
some cakes.
But the secret, shall we disclose the secret? We know the secret.
I know what it is.
Everybody knows it.
Love.
Mayo.
Yeah. Mayonnaise. But is chocolate that, mayonnaise cake really? Has been around forever.
And the thing is... And
go
Dana
look at
and
Betty
were,
Crocker's 1932 cookbook.
Dana and I were discussing this. Mayo, at its simplest form, is oil and eggs. And that's what you put in a cake.
This is the perfect time to flip the script. Here's what you do in the think tank process. Is you say, what is it? I asked four people in the elevator on the way down, and they all said mayo. Here's what you do. As soon as people say mayo, instead of saying, ah, you go, that's what everybody thinks.
But...
And then you make it into something...
Miracle Whip.
It's ballpark not, mustard.
Right. Not yeah. crystal meth. Or anything.
I would not have ever guessed different. That there's, and yeah. what you said is true, the breakdown of mayonnaise is exactly that, but I would not have put that in any chocolate cake. That would not have made sense to me.
It makes it fantastic. And here's the thing that I like.
Moist.
Because,
yeah.
because for me, cake is merely the vehicle with which frosting gets into my mouth. And I absolutely love their frosting.
They've got
love
a good
it.
Frosting
Their
delivery
chocolate
system.
Frosting is fantastic.
It's pretty great. But now, Bill, here's the problem that I ask you. You don't like mayonnaise or anything involved with it. Are
not
you going to stop
fan.
Eating chocolate cake from Portillo's?
When I'm done eating it, I will stop temporarily.
Well, I think, Bill, and you'll know this as a guy who loves customer service. I think when you're at the counter, you can just merely ask them to hold the mayonnaise.
Right. It's fun to ask that.
Mayonnaise on the side.
If you wouldn't mind.
And then you'll get an Oreo wafer. That's all they'll give you.
Here is the deal, though. The kind of cake that we were talking about, which is, of course, chocolate cake, has a history that dates back to 1764. Mm-hmm. 1764.
Holy.
Yeah. However, it wasn't until 1912 that it became the darker chocolate look that we know and love.
What
it
was
used
it prior?
To be,
what were they
used
doing?
To be,
pale?
It was green,
used,
clear.
It was far more expensive, and it wasn't as easy to incorporate because of the way that they ground the cocoa beans.
Yeah.
So it was harder to incorporate, so it was a much lighter brown.
Mm. Well, but now, the same flavor, just a different color.
More tan
but not
than brown.
Even, not, yeah, yes, but not nearly as much flavor because there wasn't as much in it. It was far more flour-based. Mm. It just had the essence of chocolate.
It was not chocorific.
It was not.
As doctors in the modern age are there to try to find cures for diseases and you know, world hunger and things like that. Back then, they were trying to find things that to make things taste good. So it was,
sure.
Back in 1764, it was Dr. James what? Baker. That was his name.
Really?
Yeah, like Baker's chocolate.
Yeah. It all makes sense.
Look at it. You learn stuff every day.
It all makes sense. And Portillo's also has, in addition to their delicious chocolate cake, you can get it in milkshake form.
You can.
I don't know anyone else who
chocolate
does that.
Chocolate cake shake.
They
and
have it.
Actually, you
Whoa.
Can Google. We did videos, I think, 2 years ago now, and Jeff Morrow came in from now Pork yes. and Mindy's, but also Sandwich King Jeff Morrow, and he made his own version of the chocolate cake shake.
How
and
was
so
that?
You Google Flavor HD Jeff Morrow chocolate cake shake, and you will find that video on
WGN. Is that pretty tasty?
It did not
well,
suck.
Yeah.
I
didn't think, he knows what he's doing.
Jeff Morrow's name came up at our house last night. I made a late night grilled ham and cheese sandwich for Jimmy Mac.
He
and he
it.
Said, you should be the sandwich queen. And I said, I can't.
I think yeah. there's an opening. Well.
No, he's married.
Well, I
no,
mean,
and it just to work with. But
yeah.
Right.
You can't do a sandwich queen when there's a sandwich king.
Well, no, you have to wait until he abdicates his throne.
Yeah, I don't know yeah. what the line of succession is, yeah. but we can
I'll
figure
get in
it
touch
out.
With him.
It's confusing. Yeah. So we want to wish everybody a happy and certainly a safe chocolate cake day.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, eat in moderation.
That's all you can do.
And you can get it by the slice there, so go do it. Treat
absolutely.
Yourself.
But I will tell you, the entire chocolate cake, $21.
That's
and
not
if
bad.
You do the quick math on how much you're paying per slice,
mm-hmm.
It's a better deal to just buy the whole darn thing.
Right.
And drop one.
That's yeah. for the big Portillo's name brand cake. But the people over at Costco make a mean chocolate cake as well. And if you want a cake that will be super chocolatey, it's super giant, tastes great, and will last you weeks.
Mm-hmm. Like that's your answer.
They're like
I've
Costco
had the Costco.
Will.
That's pretty I mean, good. And
Costco's,
Sam's Club too. I gotta say,
yeah, Costco's bakery is pretty solid. I will. I do want to reference the fact that Wendy just talked about dropping a piece of chocolate cake. There will be a video, maybe now, up at WGNRadio.com of a piece of chocolate cake. That is now sitting there waiting for someone who just doesn't care to
I just
it.
Want
to
alert Adele that her billion mark on YouTube will be surpassed easily by that video. So good luck, Adele.
Hello.
Yeah. Chicago Restaurant Week. Yeah.
If,
what do we need to know?
If there is one item on a menu, right, that deserves its own restaurant week, I think the Portillo's chocolate cake might be one, right, where it could have its own restaurant week.
Sure.
Well, more and more restaurants are getting in on it. They had advertised on their site 250 restaurants involved
wow.
in Chicago Restaurant Week. Talking with Jason over there at Choose Chicago, they actually had 354. So more and more restaurants getting involved every year with Chicago Restaurant Week. And it goes until next Thursday, so there's still time to get in, get involved. And the great thing about it is it's got set pricing. So prefix menus, lunch 22, dinners either 33 or 44, and restaurants in all the different neighborhoods. You've got, you know, Andersonville, Hyde Park. You've got all of your, you know, West Loop, all the ones that you know and love, plus a lot of extra, but Bridgeport, and price points all over the place for restaurants.
Wait, explain what that means. There's a fixed price, so you go into a restaurant anywhere in the city, and there's
not
already...
Not anywhere, but 354 different
places.
One of
the participating ones? Okay.
And ChooseChicago.com, there's a list of all the different places. What you go in, and you don't need to make reservations, although it's recommended, but it's not necessarily required, and you show up, and what they're able to do is put together a menu of items that that they want, that the chef puts together. It's either 22 for lunch, or either 33 or 44. It doesn't include gratuity, and it doesn't include, you know, if you're going to have a bunch of, you know, tequila drinks or some beers or some tings, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so you're not ordering off the menu. This, you walk in and they give you what they give you.
Okay.
Yeah.
But these are great opportunities to check out some restaurants all the way from, so some of the pastoral guys have something up in Andersonville, all to Intro. Remember Intro we had here, which has different chefs come in. So you've got elevated restaurants on the high end, and you've got some nice ma and pa ones on the other side.
And don't be scared off because it's crowded, because it's restaurant week, because Naha just actually tweeted, yes, it's restaurant week, and yes, we're crowded, but we have space at the bar. So you can call up and go to your favorite restaurant anyway. Just look on their Twitter or their Facebook, or just give them a call and see if they still have spaces.
And for some restaurants like that, that maybe you haven't gotten to go to, but you know and love and would like to try out, but also brand new ones like Cherry Circle Room over at the Chicago Athletic Club. Mm-hmm. That's a new restaurant that's there. This may be the opportunity to get over there, check it out on a budget.
Do it.
Alpana Singh, she had a restaurant that she opened up. She came in here, and remember, she touted
boarding
she had the
hamburgers,
and then the other one, yeah,
Seven Lions is the one, and that is a new addition. I'm glad you mentioned it, Wendy. That's a new addition to Restaurant Week as well. So it's right there, right across from.
She
the
said
artist.
She has the best hamburger, and once we have one, we'll never go anywhere else. So we should take her up during Restaurant Week.
Just saying, as long as it's on the menu.
Anna, you just mentioned about eating. You have the option to eat at the bar. Are you a fan of this? Is this a good thing in restaurants?
I do. I like it when I can sneak past a huge line. I don't necessarily need the fancy of sitting at a table. Yeah. If I'm hungry and I walk in and there's spots at the bar, do it.
I like it if it's just the two of us, if it's my right. wife and I someplace. But if we're out with people and they say, hey, we've got four or five spots at the bar, you can
That's
take.
That's different because it impairs conversation.
Yeah.
And if you have kids under 21, you can't sit at the bar with them.
No, they're constantly trying to serve them. It gets awkward.
No.
Yeah, but if you're just having food, what's the difference?
You just send them over to the gambling machine or the...
Yeah, they'll be fine.
Go buy me some cigarettes. Right. Yeah,
that's how we grew up.
That's all right. And on a night where the Blackhawks might be playing, except for last night, it's
not
a bad thing.
You know why
they
played like that last night? Because Adele was playing. They played Hello. That is not a hockey song. It made our guy... We have heavy metal at the United Center.
Right. It made them lackadaisical.
Yeah. It was like, I'm going to go take a nap.
There could be something to that. Guys, happy Restaurant Week. Happy Chocolate Cake Day. Boy, the holidays just stock up
this
time
of
year.
It's
crazy. It's Hannah and Dane from Flavor HD. Their website is flavorhd.com. We'll take a quick break, and then Kim Gordon with the news. Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder live from the Allstate Showcase Studio here on 720 WGN. And we have some young folk in the studio, Bill.
It's always fun to bring in young kids, especially inventors, because then you and I look like doofuses. And it's fun for everybody, isn't it?
Let's start from the top and we'll introduce everyone. But we read the story and thought it was a very sad story that turned out to be a really helpful thing. 16-year-old Isabella Fontanini. Am I saying that right? Okay, Isabella, you and with the help of your classmates, we've got Kevin Coons, Kyle Wong, and Carlos Von Bork. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah.
You guys created something after a sad story involving your grandparents. Isabella, tell us what happened with your grandparents that made you think about this new invention.
They left their keyless ignition car running in their garage, and like the carbon monoxide like spilled into their house and killed both of them. Oh.
So it was a connected house and garage.
Yeah.
And with these keyless things, and engines are so quiet these days, they didn't realize that was on.
Yeah,
and
they didn't know.
So the carbon monoxide seeped into the house, and unfortunately, you lost your grandparents. So sorry to hear that news, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. Second of all, that got you thinking, I got to come up with something that could help prevent this from happening again so my grandparents don't die in vain.
Yeah.
So what did you do?
Well, my dad and I were thinking about some ideas, and this came up. So then I brought it up to the group, and we invented this idea.
Why don't you talk about your group, introduce them all, and tell us how you did this?
Okay, well, this is Kyle.
Hi there.
And that's Carlos, you know, Kevin, Mr. Puglio. And
Joe Puglio, you're the teacher of a class.
So the class is called the Business Incubator, and it's kind of a new concept in education. And it's where kids actually spend the year developing a business. They come up with a problem-based idea that they develop a business off of. And then they spend the year with mentors from the community and coaches. So it's really bringing the community into the school. And they create a business and hopefully a product. And then they go into like a shark tank at the end of the year. Jeez. And there's investors that potentially could invest if they believe an idea is, you know, could potentially make
a business.
Do you
know what we did in school every day? We colored. We had a coloring book and we colored and we stayed in the line.
Not at Lake Forest High School.
We're way cool. That's fantastic that you guys have a program like this. How long has that been going on?
We started it last year. Yeah. I actually initiated it, and we have an incredible foundation that partners with us. And they get parents and community members involved, and it's extremely dynamic. It's different from any other type of class. Wow.
So a carbon monoxide detector, a lot of us have those in our homes, but not in a car. And we were talking about this off the air. You couldn't use one of those carbon monoxide detectors in your car?
You can't use it in a garage because the temperatures, you know, ruin the detecting.
Yeah, it's not a temperature-controlled environment like inside of a home, so they don't really work like they usually do.
But now there's something you can use, right? Yeah. What's it called?
CO Secure.
CO Secure?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's our company name.
We're using, look, they have a company, Bill.
There's a company. Of course there is.
I love it.
Wow. So you must, I'm guessing, you had to do a lot of research before anything else. What was the research process like?
Well, we talked to a lot of people. We're talking to an engineer right now to see like if we can actually make this, but it's been a good experience.
Why don't you guys explain what it is, how it works, or, you know, the concept?
Well, we're using OBD technology in cars.
Which is what?
Well,
we're old and stupid.
Are you familiar with like Snapshot from Progressive or...
Yes.
Yeah, so it's using the same technology as that is, and I think Verizon's coming out with a new thing called Hum. It's the same thing. Well, it basically just senses all the functions in the car. And so what we're doing is we're cutting out the whole carbon monoxide detecting process in general. We're just seeing if the car is still running. So if the car is still running in your garage, it will send a signal to your garage door opener and then open up the garage door to release all the carbon monoxide from the garage.
Okay, that's genius. I have to ask, though, what if it's an old garage where there is no garage door opener or electronic thing? Is there going to be an app that maybe contacts the person to say, hey, your phone is...
Go ahead, tell them what it does also when it...
Okay, well, if your car has been left running for 15 minutes, it will automatically like send you a text like notifying you that your car's still running.
All right, that's pretty helpful.
What I don't... Forgive me for not knowing this, but what is the danger zone time-wise? How much time do you have before something needs to be done?
It depends on the person and the size, and like it can even take like 5 minutes, and it depends how much carbon monoxide is in a room to actually, like, you know, kill you.
Okay. But one of the helpful things that Isabella's father told me when I spoke with him was that carbon monoxide fills a room, and you have your carbon monoxide detector up on the ceiling. So by the time it reaches that, it's already filled. So he had said to me, you know, tell your folks and tell people, put the carbon monoxide detector
lower
in the room. Yes. So that was
That's
a cool
a great
thing.
Idea.
Because I've heard you're supposed to have one in your basement, but they always say put it upstairs in the far bedrooms and stuff. But yeah, I mean, there are some that move around, but you could probably be more beneficial to put it by the baseboard under the bed or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Interesting. Look at you guys have saved more lives today just by knowing that. So if this sells, you can be millionaires and stuff?
Oh, definitely.
Well, you're not doing it with the exception of Carlos, you're not doing it for the money. You're doing it for,
we tell Carlos
for the
not
good
to
of
talk.
Right, absolutely.
So how did you pick your team? Isabella, you have this idea, and again, it's a terrible tragedy that you lost your grandparents to this. But then how did you form this team together, and how come they took your idea?
We were formed with our business DNA. It's like BOCE, if you heard of that.
And this is like a foreign language I'm hearing today.
And like I got like the S, which is like scientific or something like that. And then everyone got different letters, so we all just connected.
They have entrepreneurs letters. Have what we're teaching in school today is that you don't. There isn't a person that is born as an entrepreneur. We all have a specific DNA to be an entrepreneur.
Sure.
So they take a test that lists the different types. There's four different types.
Yeah. Okay?
B is business.
No.
Oh.
No.
B is.
And what ends up happening is like one is an inventor. One, you know, they have different types. Mm-hmm. And so each of the students in the class, we figured out what types they are, and then they had to form groups so that they had one of each type.
Oh, good group, idea. Which so you have four different power. Kinds of strengths all right. working together. Yeah, right, that's right. brilliant.
Right. We got to go back to high school.
Yeah.
Oh, you can
things
come
have
in.
Changed so much since we had no homework but no cool classes. You have a ton of homework, don't you?
Yeah.
So how do you have time to work on these inventions?
Yeah. You know, don't do homework.
Yeah, oh, we'll be fine time.
If you guys had a chance to go on a show like Shark Tank, how would you convince these guys? I mean, these guys have seen it all. What would you do in your pitch to let them know that this is not just a viable option and a safe option, but something that could potentially make some money down the road, too? What would you do?
Well, right now we're actually in the process of making an MVP and trying to find funding for MVP.
Minimum viable product.
All
right. Yeah, so right now we're putting a presentation together to try to get funding from the foundation to let us make like a prototype for this.
Yeah.
So we'd probably make a prototype, get some like data on that by just, you know, using it around. And show that.
But you say that, but that's, I mean, I hate to say this, that's not an easy step. I mean, that could cost a lot of money and take a lot of time, right?
So what they do is they start with, in the world of entrepreneurship, this idea of a minimum viable product is basically what they do is they create a product in the cheapest, smallest context.
Right.
And then what they do is they go out and they try it. You know, they test it. They work with it. And then they pivot from that. They adjust. They alter. So it's based on what people... you know, the information people give them. And that's the way entrepreneurs are working today. What they're doing is they kind of create a product before it's really fully developed.
Right.
And they keep altering. It's sort of similar to Tucker.
But it needs to be, ideally, a working model, doesn't it?
Yes. It has to be something that is working. But we also try to teach them the way you create a business is off of a problem.
Yeah.
And these guys really have done a good job because they have a problem that is really a problem.
Yep.
And people tend to buy things to self-produce.
Absolutely. And this device, as we learned, CO Secure, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be hopefully paid for. And this estimated cost, about $80 to $85, still in the design stage. But people would pay that. I mean, especially when you have the garage.
You're gonna need a guitar, guys.
Right.
Get yourselves a guitar.
Carlos has those.
Yeah, he does. All right.
I knew one of the four did. They're high school students. But when your garage is connected to your house, that really is a big problem,
yeah.
Which unfortunately you found out. What else is left? What do you have to do before you have this prototype up and going?
Just finish our MVP, you know, get more data on the customer and the market for our product.
We want to like try and get our idea out there. And shout out to our Facebook page. It's
all right. Yes, tell us.
CO Secure.
So, what? Explain that just a little bit. Once you set up a Facebook page, and what were you doing? Were you just creating awareness, saying to people, "Here's something we're working on."
Yeah, we're just like spreading the idea and telling everybody about the threat of carbon monoxide because not a lot of people know about it.
Yeah.
And what about a patent? I mean, you're on the radio with us now talking about it. What if somebody does this?
Well, what happens is if they get funded, like I have a group from last year that's called High School Hired.
Yeah.
They were funded. They were given $20,000. So we spent the summer actually creating the business. They have to incorporate. They have to deal with lawyers. They have to learn about insurance. They have to go through copyright, patent, all of these things. So if they receive funding, we go through that for real.
You got to get a patent. I learned that with my potato chip hat.
Absolutely.
If you don't have a patent, people will steal your idea.
Absolutely.
Well, you were eating the profits, admit that.
All fair.
I like the chocolate cake stuff.
Thank you.
Well, best of luck to you. This really is a problem, and you have really tapped into something, Isabella and your other classmates, Kevin,
Kyle, and Carlos.
Yes. You have tapped into something that we didn't know about until it happened to you. But, you know, that's what a good, important thing is. We don't know we need something until something like this happens. So thanks for letting us know we need this product.
Yeah.
CO Secure. What's next? Do we look for it sometime soon?
I think probably the best thing is to look at their Facebook page and try to, you know, become aware of the prototype. And they're working with, they have an incredible mentor. Who's your mentor?
Shout out to George Day.
Yeah. George is their mentor.
Joe, I thought it was going to be you.
No,
I'll be honest.
I'm the teacher.
I was sure that it was going to be
teacher.
You.
He's, you know, he is a successful entrepreneur himself, and he's working with the students, and he has some leads for someone helping them build a prototype.
Good.
And we've gone through all the different, they've looked at pricing, they have a financial plan. So we're building towards that. Hopefully there's enough interest and they can get a prototype to actually pitch it to investors.
Good.
For seed money.
Is this process kind of what you guys thought it would be, or is it dramatically different from what you expected it to be?
It's different.
Is
I
it?
Thought, yeah.
How come?
It's more work, isn't it?
Yeah, because I took like a business class freshman year. It's so easy, and this is like really hard because you need to work out of school and in school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's no downtime on something like this.
And they have to work with adults a lot.
Yeah.
You know, they have to learn how to go make phone calls, how to do that on their own. No one's doing it for them. So.
But this, you'll see, this will help you so much later in life. I mean, it may not seem like it now, but this is invaluable for the rest of your life. So good.
Yeah. I'm very impressed, man. Isabella Fontanini.
Fontanini.
Kevin Kunz, am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Kyle Wong and Carlos Von Bork and your teacher at Lake Forest High School, Joe Puglio?
Puglio, right.
Nice to meet you guys. Continued success. I have a feeling this isn't going to be the first thing that you guys invent. We'll all be working for you someday, so be nice to us. Remember us when we had you on.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Great
really
to see you. A quick break and then more show ahead. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. How about those kids coming up with, I mean, really, it started out as a terrible, terrible situation. Isabella loses her grandparents in a carbon monoxide accident, and then they turn around and they make it something good. They're working on this thing. Good for them.
You and I were just talking off the air how jealous we are to have a class like this.
Wouldn't you have loved, I don't know if...
Your potato chip hat would have been a reality. I know I said reality, funny.
Wow. We didn't have anything close to this in high school where it's an entrepreneur class where you go through the development stages of drawing out an idea and then marketing it and building it. That's fantastic.
You know what we had?
What?
And you probably had the same thing. It was called consumer ed, and you learned how to balance a checkbook
that
and write
it.
A check. You don't even need to write checks anymore.
And there were kids in the class that were baffled by that.
I know.
Wait,
like,
you
really?
You got to subtract and then add and subtract. I can't do that.
It's so easy. All right. Well, that's a great invention. It is called the CO Secure.
I'm reading online here. Amy Schumer has started a company named CO Safe.
Wait, she stole the idea from those kids?
That's what I'm reading.
Oh, Kevin. What's wrong with that Amy Schumer?
I didn't realize, though, that this will go in the car, and the product plugs into the car, a CO detector, and alert sounds if the car is on. And if you have an electric garage door opener, the door will open. And usually
right.
a connected garage to a house is more of a newer building, so you would have a garage door opener, but we live in old houses in our area, so
right.
there's not always an electric garage door opener. But this will send you an alert. I mean, you don't think about these things until it happens.
Exactly. And I in my head, I'm trying to think, I know the house that I grew up in did not have carbon monoxide detectors. The house that
they
I live in
have
now,
them.
They weren't available, were they?
No.
I don't remember that being an option. We didn't even have, again... Were there smoke detectors? We had one in our kitchen, and that just meant dinner was ready because it would go off every time the food was done.
Exactly, because your oven, if you didn't clean it up after every cooking,
right.
there'd be some burnt
right.
on drippings.
Did you guys do the towel trick, too?
Oh, my God. I can't think of my mom. Like if you quickly said to me, quick, think of your mom. It's my mom with a towel in a helicopter fashion over the smoke detector. And saying, the chicken's ready, guys. Come on down. Dinner's ready. But she looked like she was just going to take off in flight from a helicopter.
Maybe we didn't have a smoke detector in the kitchen. Because we thought to put it somewhere else.
It was
because
the weirdest place for us to put it.
We didn't have it in our kitchen.
That's where ours was.
We had it like walking from the kitchen down to the TV room
yeah.
in a lower level. It was right on that stairwell
yeah.
there.
That's
because
where
the
it made
kitchen.
Sense.
Why did you guys have it in the kitchen?
It was the weird. It was to be fair, because I know a lot of the listeners have been by my house. It's like it's the hallway that was just it's the kitchen, and then there's the hallway, and it was right there at the top,
which is where all the smoke would hang out.
Ours was like right in the living room, and we'd open every window, every door,
really?
And just fan like a madman. Yeah,
boy, they've come a long way now, haven't they? The smoke detectors.
Yeah.
But what fascinated me is learning from these kids. I guess Isabella's father said carbon monoxide detectors, it rises up, so you're better having it
around the baseboard, a little bit lower. That seems a lot smarter, doesn't it?
Because do you have carbon monoxide detectors in your house?
We do.
Have two of them, but they're both in the upstairs bedrooms.
Yeah.
Don't you want to get it before it gets to the top level?
Yes.
Although if it rises, it's going to go to the top level first.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too.
God,
that's very,
we really
very true.
Need this class.
Yeah.
Because really, if it rises, you want it upstairs.
I think, that's your best play is to put it the higher up you possibly could, I would imagine. Yeah.
All right, well, now I'm confused with that tip.
I don't know. Maybe it's better we didn't have classes like this when we were in school. We would have both flunked. But I get so jealous when I hear, like, my daughters had all kinds of classes like this when they were in high school. And I just went, what's happened to curricula around the world where they figured out, let's really start preparing kids for the future? I mean, look, math is important and science is important and English is incredibly important. But stuff like this keeps kids in the game. You want to learn more if you got classes like this.
I know my goofy junior, Michael, has his new schedule. He has to get ready for senior year. We've had all week to go over it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a text about a half an hour ago. I have to confirm these classes by today at 3.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what I'm doing. Like, I would have liked to have time to digest it.
Of course.
But then I think about it, and I don't know if you remember this with your girls being in senior year. Did you really have a say-so into what they took? They have the requirements that they need for college.
Right.
Then other than that, you didn't really...
No. I always found out after they were already in the classes. They never gave me any kind of a hand in their options. No.
Because the parents have to sign off on it. That's the only reason he wanted to kind of let
me
know.
We didn't... Unless Terry did it without my knowledge, but I just think it was up to... Like when we went to school, it was up to us, right? There weren't very many options, but the ones there were, it was up to the kid.
Spanish,
I don't remember my parents.
Spanish or French.
Right. Right.
Michael's taking Latin poetry. I don't know why. And
that's going to come in extremely handy.
Latin prose is what he's taking next year.
Wow.
What's wrong with him?
Is he going to time travel? Because Latin's not used.
The dead language. I know everybody says that. And that's what I feel so terrible about is when Michael said he was taking Latin, both Jim and I were like, what are you taking Latin for?
Yeah.
Are you going to be the Pope? Maybe. But it's like, take something that you'd be
a little more functional,
useful, like Spanish,
right,
maybe, or even Italian or something.
Right.
No, I want to take Latin. And then I would talk to the neighbor who said, oh, my kid didn't want to take Latin. We made him. Because once you take Latin, you learn the roots of a lot of other languages.
Right. And you could read coins, too, which is valuable.
You know what's really good? Prescriptions.
Yeah, that's true. So who's the goof? Maybe he knows what he's doing. He's very smart. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Then we'll talk to Steve Bertrand, find out what he has coming up on the Wintrust business launch. That's what's next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Kim. Hi, everyone. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. It's the second part of our show. We're at 312-981-7200. We're in the Allstate Showcase studio. We're thrilled to be here. We're thrilled that you're listening. Should be a good second half of the show. It should be. I mean, on paper, I'm looking at it.
It looks great on paper.
Anyone, you know, would enjoy a show like this, but we'll see how it plays out.
And can I throw a spoiler alert out right now?
Yeah.
And to you?
Yeah.
At 1:35 after the 1:30 news, we're going to be talking to this guy about making a murderer. I say it just like that because if you're not caught up, which I kept postponing guest ideas because I want you to catch up. Plus, I just want to talk to you about
it. Oh, I know. You're done with it. You've seen all 10 episodes.
I watched it one Friday night into Saturday morning.
Back to back to back to
That's
back.
That's only 10 hours.
You got all 10 hours done
at
once.
I'd stop and have a beer, go maybe have a piece of pizza with the kids,
right,
and then I went back and watched it. And
right.
I mean, there are just some theories. So if you haven't seen it, then 1:35, I would say you don't necessarily want to be here. But it's, you know what it's about because of the title and because people have been talking about it. I think it came out early December.
This guy Avery's been in the news so often.
Stephen Avery, yeah, can't avoid it.
You kind of know where he is right now, but
but
yeah,
to see the orchestrations of the courtroom is just worth it in itself.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's pretty fascinating. So 1:35, we're going to talk to someone about Making a Murder. I don't even want to say what it's about right now, but if you're not up to date or you don't want spoilers, I hate to uninvite
you. That you're doing the right thing. That's
I'm never on top of things. You know, usually I'm the one, you know, that you have to use spoiler alerts 20 years later.
Right.
So this is like the first time I'm on this end of it. But
we still dance around the ending of Citizen Kane around you, just in case.
I've never seen that movie. Isn't that terrible of me?
Oh, you gotta see Citizen Kane. You gotta see it. That was my dream, was for you and me and Abe Vigoda to sit down together, the three of us, and watch Citizen Kane, and now that's never going to happen.
You know, I am heartbroken, and I know he was 94 years old, and I know he came up on this show last week.
Yeah, we talked about him a week
ago. But that doesn't count with our thing, because, you know, people have thought he's been dead for
30 years.
Yeah.
I know. Imagine existing. Imagine having a day-to-day life where every day somebody sees you in a shopping center or just crossing a street and goes, I thought you've been dead for 30 years. What a terrible thing that is.
It's better than the outcome now.
Right, that's true.
I'd rather be thought dead than be
really dead. Right, and he was working steadily. He did a commercial a year ago, a Snickers commercial. He was still working.
Oh, that's right.
So it's not like he's one of those guys that just, where'd that guy go? He was still around, but every time people saw him, they go, oh, Abe Vigoda. You're dead, right? No, I'm not dead. I'm sitting right here talking to you.
It's sad living in a world where Abe Vigoda is dead, Bill.
I don't know how to cope with it. Earlier, Steve Cochran played some audio of Abe Vigoda, and something happened where Abe Vigoda sounded like a British nobleman.
It's the Madonna syndrome. I swear to God, all of a sudden he was speaking about being an actor, and he was sounding like this. And this is a guy who goes, Bernice.
I know.
That wasn't acting.
I know.
How come all of a sudden he's this Shakespearean English actor like Madonna became?
You know who else does that to some extent? George Takei from Star Trek. He's got some weird affected accent. Where you go,
isn't that a good George Takei?
That's a pretty good, yes. Yes.
Sulu.
Yes, it is. Mr. Sulu.
He speaks like that, too?
He's got a little bit of an effect. And I know people in show business sometimes tend to steer that way. I understand that, where they have a little bit of an affected accent. But Abe Vigoda and George Takei and Madonna are not from Gloucester, England. They're not.
Do you think they do that so people think they're smarter? Because they do sound very learned if they speak in such a way that people think you are very bright and intelligent.
I will back that up by telling you that when I went to Columbia College, there was a professor there who had a magnificent British accent, and he was from the south side of Chicago.
Are you stinking kidding me?
I'm not kidding. And like I bought into it for a little while. I never had him for a class, but I'd see him in the hall, or he'd be pontificating about something, and there'd be a crowd gathered, and he'd be going on about something. And I used to go, wow, I wonder what his backstory is. And I asked one of my friends there at school, and they go, he's from here. He's from, like, near White Sox Park.
Did you ask Jerry Seinfeld? Because that's what it sounded like.
He's local. He's from here.
I didn't know he went to Columbia.
Yeah, I went to school with Jerry Seinfeld. What's your elective? What are you doing?
Oh, why did he do that? To sound more learned?
To command more respect.
Oh, my God.
I know.
If I hear the word respect one more time, I'm going to puke.
I respected him less once I knew he was from here pretending to have a British accent.
It's called poser.
He was a poser. The guy's a poser. It was the weirdest thing. Like, wouldn't you forget sometimes? Wouldn't you go to school and just forget? Like, every once in a while, I'd go, oh, right, I'm doing that British accent thing. I totally forgot. I got to do a British accent every day.
Madonna forgot every once in a while.
She slips in and out of it.
I don't think she still has it now, though.
Trying to remember the last few times I saw her. No, maybe not.
Although I didn't hear her speak when she fell off the stage when her cape got caught. Remember that
she
video?
She probably
that
swore in British. Blimey. I don't know how they swear in British. I think maybe when she was married to Guy Ritchie, maybe that influenced her a little bit. You don't think so? But still, you would know you're not from England. You're from Michigan, and that's a stretch.
Why isn't she sending water to the people there? why isn't she? Cher?
I know. stop Vogue dancing and send some water.
Pearl Jam also sent, they joined a GoFundMe page, $300,000 worth of water.
There's I keep seeing more and more lists, and I'm thrilled that people are coming to their aid. That's good news.
And that firefighter Washington that we had on the show and Ro had on and everyone's had on, he's been on all the news stations, CNN, and he had to kept raising his increments on the GoFundMe page.
Yeah.
And now he's up to like $30,000 to bring water, and he's doing it on the 29th.
Good for him. That's very, very good.
It is very nice.
Let's do this. A quick break, and then I'm going to tell you about a politician who keeps saying the darndest things, the craziest things. And
it's not
Trump. It's not Donald Trump. It's another guy.
Sorry, I didn't mean to step on your line. I read the wrong line of the script.
Please. We'll tell you about him. He said another gem yesterday. I think you'll enjoy it. Stick around. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's us. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder.
And Chicago Tribune delivers the stories that make the city with more journalists at work than any other local news source. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com.
All right. Before we go into detail about this guy, I want to say this. I love Maine. We go to Maine almost every summer, my wife and I.
You lobster lover, you.
I enjoy everything about Maine. I love the food there. I love just the feel of Maine. The people are very, very nice in Maine. We've been going, for about 20-something years.
Have you really?
Yeah. Not every summer. There were a couple years where we didn't go, and I missed it tremendously. But somewhere around the middle of the summer, almost every year, we take a break 3, 4, 5 days, and we go to Maine. That said, the governor of Maine is completely out of his mind. I'll give you a little bit of backup. I don't want us to just say something like that and have you think it's a personal opinion. I will tell you what he's done in the last couple of weeks, including yesterday.
And then we can make our own personal opinions?
It's up to you.
All right.
If you disagree, by all means, let me know. His name is Paul Lepage. He is the governor of Maine and has been for a while. And he said a couple of weeks ago, he was explaining there's a little bit of a drug problem in Maine, as there is everywhere else.
Although, I'm sorry, I don't think Maine wouldn't be my first state I'd go, wow, I bet they're dealing in drugs over there.
No, because you think, they're probably outdoor either catching a lobster or doing something.
Playing tennis?
Maybe some tennis. There's some national parks there. Acadia National Park is stunning. Maybe they're probably hiking up on some mountain. They don't have time to be doing drugs. But that said, there's parts of Maine that have a pretty serious drug problem. So he was explaining how this problem came to be, and I think you'll be baffled by it. I am. Listen to the governor of Maine explain this. Now, this is from a couple of weeks ago. Listen to this.
Oh, stand by, says Kevin. He was just listening to you speak. He didn't realize he had to hit a button.
Oh, yeah. All right.
These are people that take drugs. These are guys of the name D-Money, Smoothie, Shifty, these type of guys that come from Connecticut, New York. They come up here, they sell their heroin, then they go back home. Incidentally, half the time they impregnate a young white girl before they leave, which is a real sad thing because then we have another issue that we got to deal with down the road.
So D-Money and Smoothie and Shifty are coming up from Connecticut, New York, and selling the drugs there in Maine. And that got a little bit of a laugh from the crowd because they thought that was funny that D-Money and Smoothie and Shifty were traveling up from Connecticut. But then he pointed out that the other problem that they have there in Maine is that they're impregnating the white women.
But Bill, you misheard him because he said he wasn't bringing race into it.
No, he's not bringing race into it.
You know, had he not said the getting our white girls pregnant,
right.
I understand the D-Money, Smoothie, and who was the other
Shifty
one?
Shifty is your third culprit. Shifty always, if you have D-Money or Smoothie, you know Shifty's not far behind, Wendy. They're always together.
I wasn't really thinking color. I was thinking drug dealer. So he got that nailed when he said that. It's just when he continued is when he put his foot
in
his mouth.
Right. Well, I don't know. I don't have a list in front of me over what the more popular names are of today's drug dealers.
And these are three of them.
Shifty. Are they on the list? D-Money is always going to be on the list. That's perennial. He's always there. All right. So, yeah, it got a little bit of a laugh at the beginning because he was drawing up these caricatures of drug dealers from exotic places like New York and Connecticut.
Right.
But then once he got into the white women, then there's some problems, okay?
So you're saying he's being anti-white? Because I'm trying to figure out, because the governor said he didn't bring race into
it. No.
Well, is this what he's saying today?
Well, it comes in increments. He then, because people said to him, hey, Governor, what are you doing? You think about this, what you just said. So then a day or two later, here's what he said. This is, again, Paul Lepage, the governor of Maine. I made one slip up. I may have made many slip ups. I was going impromptu in my brain. Have you ever gone impromptu in your brain? You know what happens.
Always gets me in trouble.
He said it didn't catch up to my mouth. Instead of saying, now this is where he clarifies it, but listen to the process by which he uses to clarify his statements. Instead of saying Maine women, I said white women. I'm not going to apologize to the Maine women for that, because if you go to Maine, you will see we are essentially 95% white. Even if I slipped up and used the wrong word, then I apologize to all the Maine women. So he's apologizing, but in the completely wrong direction.
Yeah.
He doesn't. That's not.
The Maine residents are not mad at you.
I don't know how you can hear that. Whoever's listening to that, you have to be upset with him, because even if you're Shifty or D Money, you got to go, hey, leave us out of it.
What about Smoothie?
It's a separate story. That guy's had problems forever.
But I get he just grabbed some names that sound like drug dealers.
Right.
And you know what? That didn't really bother me so much when he said that.
Right.
But then as he continued, that he did.
Okay.
Thinking impromptu is not good.
But I wonder what the drug dealers' names really are.
Right.
No, I do. Because if he's dealing with methamphetamines and things like that.
It could be Herbert
Jim or Henry
and Billy.
No, it's a rural. It's often a rural drug.
But just his way of saying, hey, come to Maine and you'll notice that 95% of the women here are white. That's not the right way to fix this.
And drug dealers apparently don't prefer the other 5%.
Right. Right.
Come to Whitey Town.
Right. That's where the Academy Awards are going to be held this year, in Bangor. All right. So then you say to yourself, if you're the governor of Maine, maybe you lay low on the comments for a little while.
Yeah, zip it, buddy.
Maybe you think, I'm going to give myself a couple months and I'm just going to hide out. I'm just going to lay
low.
Couple
months?
I'm not
going to
do anything.
Long.
All right, so here, this is as of yesterday. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Maine Governor Paul Lepage believes that drug traffickers shouldn't get longer prison sentences. They should instead be subjected to the death penalty, specifically by way of the guillotine. Again, if you want to check your calendars, 2016.
I still have 2015.
No, it's 2016. What I think we ought to do, he says, is bring the guillotine back. We should have public executions, Lepage said in a Tuesday interview with the radio station WVOM. Okay, Vomit, have you ever listened to the Vomit station up there in Maine? It's fantastic.
I'll vomit all the time.
It's coming up.
Oh.
News in chunks. You're listening to WVOM.
Conversations blow.
And that's perfect for ADD people, because you're supposed to do your things in chunks.
Yes.
And what blows? I'm sorry. Steve?
I'm sorry, what?
What blows?
Said the other stations.
Oh, you're good.
We'll hold your hair back while you listen to the
Maine. That could be their top moneymaker contest.
Yes. Maine, like many other states, is struggling with heroin epidemics, and that's not funny. Lepage frequently talks about this at his public events, we know. He recently made national news when he commented on traffickers coming from Connecticut and New York with names like D-Money, Smoothie, and Shifty, who come up here, sell their heroin, and then they go back home. Incidentally, half the time, they impregnate a young white girl before they leave. Now, this is interesting. He says half the time. He may be off on the stats just a little bit. I'm almost positive it's not 50% of the time.
Drug dealers are virile.
They must be. After intense criticism, Lepage said he never meant his comments to be about race, as Steve pointed out. I tried to explain that Maine is essentially all white, he said. I should have said Maine women. I think the death penalty, this is getting back to yesterday, I think the death penalty should be appropriate for people that kill Mainers.
I think I found Donald Trump's running mate, by the way.
No, I think even Trump is like, uh-oh. Lepage added, I think 4 years in prison is not good enough. We got to go to 20 years. We have to keep them here until they die. The last time France executed somebody by way of the guillotine was 1977, which, by the way, is shocking to me.
I know.
When you think guillotine, don't you think hundreds of years ago? Not 1977.
Sure, no, I thought Marie Antoinette.
Right around that era.
Wow, really? 1970?
1977 was the last time France executed somebody by way of the guillotine.
He fancies himself a student of French history. No, I really think he
does.
Yeah.
He does. The country, France we're talking about here, abolished the death penalty in 1981. The United States has never used this method of execution. They've never used the guillotine here in the United States. Although if you go to a trick shop, you can get the one that cuts cigarettes or your finger in half by way of the guillotine. You've seen that, right?
It's fun.
It is fun.
You're not supposed to cut your finger with it.
Well, they show you, you know, you can put your finger in there and then move it down, but it doesn't actually cut your finger off. It looks like it is going to, but it doesn't actually.
Well, a cigar cutter is pretty much a little
guillotine. Yeah, it is
guillotine.
A baby guillotine. Yeah.
A baby guillotine.
Baby guillotine. Guillotinette.
We'll get one for Ross Conkret's baby.
Let's use a different phrase. Right. Miniature.
We didn't get a baby gift, so yeah, here's a little baby guillotine,
that's
Ross.
From all of us here on the
Abigail
Midday Show.
Abigail will love it.
We all pitched in. Steve pitched in, Kevin, Wendy, myself. It's a little baby guillotine. LePage told WVOM Tuesday that he will not be delivering his annual State of the State address. He's going to take this one off.
No, it would be WVOM. Oh,
I know.
That would be that's their tone.
Right. In which governors traditionally speak to the state legislature about their accomplishments and policy priorities. Instead, he'll be submitting his remarks in written form, which is a really good idea because then somebody could proofread them before anybody else reads them.
That is a good idea.
My gosh. Sorry for my language. So there you have it. I know we think sometimes that our governors are a little bit strange, but think about the situation in Maine where this guy's 3 for 3 in the last 2.5 weeks.
How's he doing job-wise, though?
The people of Maine are so laid back. Like here in Chicago, when we get a governor, here in Illinois, when we get a governor who says stuff like this, we kind of react to it. The people of Maine are much more gentle about stuff like this. I mean, they weren't thrilled. Remember one of your friends came by about 1.5 weeks ago and live in
Claudia,
Maine?
Oh, yeah, yes.
And I said, how about your governor? And she made big eyes like, uh-oh. I got to go back to that guy.
But she's from here, so that's why she gets it.
Right, right.
That's a good point.
If you're
point.
Trained on having a governor like we've had here in Illinois, then the governor of Maine isn't that foreign to you. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We have a lot more show for you, and it's us, Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I have to admit, when I binge-watched Making a Murderer, I did not fast-forward through the beginning.
No, the theme song sets you up for the rest of the show. It's perfect.
But
it's
I watched
eerie.
10 in a row
yeah.
and still didn't fast-forward because you need to see
I get it.
The vision they have of Manitowoc, Wisconsin. Yeah. It is perfect. Mm-hmm. Now, you are not caught up, are you?
I'm on episode 3. I got a little ways to go.
Kevin, you're finished?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Burn through it.
I just want to say this now for listeners who I don't want to ruin things. I don't want to spoil things for
right.
you. But if you haven't seen the whole thing, then maybe you don't want to listen to this interview.
All right. So take a little time off.
Or we'll maybe you do.
Yeah.
Like I knew information about this show before I started binge watching it one Friday night into Saturday morning. I will, in a nutshell, and you're up to episode 3. Without giving things away, there's this guy, Stephen Avery, who is from a family of what appears to be ne'er-do-wells in comparison to the other members of the community.
Farm community, but they have like an auto junkyard. They're not farmers like everybody else, so they're kind of outcasts in this town.
And Stephen Avery has been in some kind. He's not a great guy. He's had some issues.
Right.
The first episode, I believe, even has him. Was that when it all started? The first episode where he was arrested for attacking and raping a woman on the beach.
Did a lot of jail time for a crime he did not commit.
18 years.
18 years. And I don't know how much more we want to say at this point, but it.
Well, I have
spiral.
To say a little more.
All right.
I have to say a little more. So, again, spoiler alert, because on the line with us is John Cameron. He's an FBI cold case worker. You've been featured on America's Most Wanted, Dateline NBC. I was on your website. And the big question, and every time we talk about Making a Murderer, there was another crime after being in prison for 18 years. Stephen Avery was convicted of another crime, this involving a murder of an Auto Trader photographer. And if you watch the court proceedings, you have questions as a viewer going, well, what about this person? What about that person? There are many times you don't think it's Stephen Avery, but no one cares. It's Stephen Avery, murderer, whatever. John Cameron has a different theory and a question people have been asked. If it wasn't Stephen Avery, then who was it? John, welcome to the show. And you have an idea of who it may be that actually killed. And I got to get her name because I feel terrible I don't bring up her name. Teresa.
Well, thanks for having me on, Bill and Wendy. Her name was Teresa Hallback.
Right.
That was the victim's name.
And I feel really heartbroken for her family that this case is out there. I really do. I mean, bottom line is someone's dead. This young girl is dead. So I just wanted to get that out.
The beginning of this for me really started with the Avery case just in the last few weeks. But I was involved in a serial killer investigation the last 6 years. And this serial killer I investigated actually started his killings and setups in Chicago in 1946. And he ended them in Chicago in 2009. And in between that 63 years of killing, he set people up all over the country. So I'd never heard of Steve Avery or Teresa Hallback or anything like this until the Netflix documentary came out. And it just fell right into place with the investigation I've been doing the last 6 years.
John, how could a guy go 63 years killing people and not get caught? That seems impossible to me.
Yeah, it seemed impossible to everybody, you know, and I didn't begin this thing trying to solve all these major cases that this man did. I really started my investigation in 2010, just trying to get him to confess to a double Lover's Lane murder he did here in Montana in 1956. That's where I'm from, and that's where I was a cop. But his ruse was basically to travel the country with a wife and children and groom his way into his victims through religious retreats or through actually policemen, lawyers, he knew them all, and then kill someone close to him and set somebody up.
And that's just it, framing someone else. That was part of what seems to be his thrill, was killing someone, but then to also watch someone go down for his crime.
That's exactly what he enjoyed. He called it crimes of recognition. You know, he killed from age 12 in 1945 until age 76 in 2009. And every one of his crimes of recognition were actually murders of recognition. And what he would do is he would pick his victims deliberately, sometimes years in advance, if not decades in advance, to kill them or kill someone close to them and set someone up close to them. And then he would love to stand in front of the investigation under assumed identity and be the helper. And nobody knew the killer was there. And constantly send cryptic letters and messages to the press, to the police, to the victim's family, and taunt them with his identity. So he really enjoyed the setup, because what he could do now that he's dead, he died in 2011, is he can continue to kill in his afterlife with the people he set up that are on death row.
All right, now there's an addendum to this story. Was there some cryptic message that you got wind of even today?
Yeah, there was. You know, I was on the radio a couple weeks ago, and I predicted that if Edwards was involved in the Teresa Hallback case, there would have been a letter sent after Steve Avery was arrested and before they arrested the second 16-year-old, Brendan Dassey.
His
nephew.
That's
what he did in all of his cases. He would send cryptic letters that actually contained the details of how he did the killing, and it would just be a big taunt to the authorities is, the letter writer is the real killer. The letter writer is the real killer. And within the letter, there's always his identity. And in the Avery case, there's a cryptic letter that is spoke about for 18 pages in the trial transcripts. And the judge refused to bring it in and refused to let the jury see it. I have not seen it yet, but I'm working on trying to get it. But that's exactly what Edwards did throughout his life, was write those cryptic letters that actually were him. It was him.
We have John Cameron on the line with us, retired police detective from Great Falls, Montana. If you go to your website's coldcasecameron.com.
That's right.
Bill, you haven't gotten to episode 6 yet of Making a Murderer, but this is something that surprised me when I was reading the article about you, John. This guy who, did we name his name? Edward Wayne Edwards. This is who you're referring
to. Name.
I don't think we ever got that out. The serial killer you've never heard of. But now, is there any truth to the fact that Edward Wayne Edwards was in the Manitowoc area about the time Teresa Hallback was murdered, and subsequently was seen in the courtroom in episode 6.
Yeah, my investigation of Ed Edwards that I actually published in 2014 showed that what he liked to do is not only kill, set someone up, but then he would attend the funerals or attend the court hearings or he would attend public gatherings to get himself photographed at the scene. And in episode 6 on Netflix of Making a Murderer, at 21 minutes and 33 seconds, there's a shot of a man in a blue sweater standing at the courthouse door behind the prosecutor. And it lasts about 6 seconds. And it looks like Edward Edwards. It has all the height, the weight, the age, the look, and the stance of what he liked to do when he was standing at his scene. And in the stance, he's basically giving you the bird with his left hand pointing down, and he's staring directly into the camera. And it just lasts 5 seconds. And that's all he would have needed, is to get involved in his own murder investigation and be standing in front of everybody. Because that's what he did his whole life.
It's the final, you know, not only killing someone, but setting someone else up to take the fall. And then the final, like, F you at right. the end when he shows up at these funerals. And now, how do we find out? I mean, John Cameron again on the line with us. And episode 6, what is it, 21 minutes in? 21 what?
21 minutes, 33 seconds into episode 6.
We looked at it. Kevin and I were watching it, and I am just intrigued by this whole Netflix series. And it does look like him. You can't be 100% sure because the photos then we saw of him older than that, it was difficult to tell. But now who can you speak to? Who can anybody speak to find out who that person was in the courtroom?
Well, I actually
or in the hallway.
I traveled to Wisconsin last week to see if the Manitowoc County Sheriff would help me identify that man. But they wouldn't actually even talk to me.
Why?
So I did visit with the Averys. That's the way this has always been. You know, Edwards set people up all over the country. And there's at least 10 people right now sitting in prison on his murders. Some are on death row. And when the police find out that they got the wrong guy, they hunker down. And that's what Making a Murderer, when people watch it, will see. But that really documentary is what happened in all of Ed Edwards' setups. Because the evidence was false. The police followed the false trail. And suddenly it was wrong. And they just hunker down and they don't admit because of liability.
But John, you yourself are a retired police detective. Was there ever a directive from anyone higher than you? Did you ever witness that firsthand? Did you see or hear that happen?
My entire investigation the last 6 years was exactly how it played out on that documentary. When I tried to approach police departments, prosecutors, attorneys, with the information I had on Ed Edwards, and he always put it out there. It was always in the cryptic letters and his appearances. They didn't want to hear it because they'd already convicted somebody. And I found over 36 wrongful convictions, and one man was executed in 1957 on one of Ed's murders. So they don't want to admit liability, and the FBI never did an investigation of serial killer Edward Wayne Edwards when he was finally caught in 2010.
They didn't.
No, he was an informant since 1951 for FBI, law enforcement everywhere. He knew him everywhere. And basically, he would get caught for burglary, robbery, and then he'd go into prison and he'd start ratting on people and ratting on his own murders to set up the people that he'd already planned the murder to go to. And he'd get out early and do it again and do it again and do it again. And he was always standing in front of us.
We have we're talking to John Cameron, retired police detective. We're talking about Edward Wayne Edwards, the book that you have. It's Me, Edward Wayne Edwards, the serial killer you never heard of. You can go to his website, coldcasecameron.com. I hate to do these spoilers. Somebody just texted us and said, pretty stupid to tell a bunch of listeners not to listen to your show, but I don't want to spoil some of this. And this Making a Murderer, it just really sucked me into it. A tiny spoiler alert. There was some evidence saying that another police district was calling Manitowoc saying, we have someone who's confessing to this murder. And they said, nope, case solved. It makes total sense to me that they would not want to revisit a mistake they made. Conversely, though, John, you have Stephen Avery, who was busted once falsely, is lightning going to strike twice? Could he be convicted again falsely? It's like you have two camps here.
Yeah, it's really horrible what happened to Stephen, because he spent 18 years in prison for an assault he didn't do.
And never gave up. I mean, never gave up. They said, if you confess, if you do anything, you can be up for parole. Otherwise, forget it. He's like, why would I confess to something I didn't do?
Yeah.
What's even worse is, in some of Edwards' cases, guys actually went into court and pled guilty to the murder so they wouldn't be executed. And their description to me every time why they did that was, how can I prove my innocence if I'm dead? And that's this mindset of people that are wrongfully convicted that are offered a plea deal. Well, we're going to kill you, or we're going to give you life. What are you going to accept? And their mindset is, I'll take life because I got to prove my innocence.
John, can I ask you, well, let's do this. Are you okay on time? We want to take a quick break. Are you all right to answer more questions?
Yeah, I can stay as long as you need.
All right. John Cameron is our guest. If you want to know more about
this. Isn't this so great? I'm sorry. Yes. I'm so sorry Teresa Halbach got killed.
Yeah,
I'm sorry an innocent man was in jail for 18 years, but this is just fascinating.
It's, yeah, it's chilling. I don't know how this happens. All right, we'll discuss this more if you want to jump in. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Making a Murderer, it's a Netflix original series. We have phone calls into the two women who took 10 years of their life making this, which a lot of people are saying it's a one-sided view. A lot of the prosecution issues have been left out. It's just fascinating to watch. We're trying to get a hold of the filmmakers to talk to them. And we have John Cameron on the line with us right now, retired police detective from Great Falls, Montana. You've worked on FBI serial killer task forces, and you've written a book. It's Me, Edward Wayne Edwards, the serial killer you never heard of. Visit his website at coldcasecameron.com. All right, John, we are talking about the Stephen Avery case, and we have a question from one of our listeners. And this is Jenny on the line with us. Jenny, John Cameron.
Hi, Wendy. Hi, Bill.
Hello, Jenny.
Hi, John. I am just as intrigued as Wendy is with this. I've watched the series twice now, trying to pick up the second time, seeing if there's things I can pick up I missed in the first.
I know. I'm going to watch it again,
series.
Too.
Yeah, you can't help it. But I wanted to know, do you think that then Manitowoc County framed him, Aunt Steve, because of his past and how he was? You know, when he was younger, and they made it sound like he was in trouble a lot. Do you think that they tried to frame him?
No, but the killer himself actually framed not only Steve, but also was framing the police, because the police were all over the press also just before the murder, because they were being deposed. They had lied in his previous conviction, and they were going to pay $36 million. And so how Edwards would work is he would pick his victims that are in the press a lot. Well, in the Avery case, you know, the victim, Steve, was all over the press. You had the police all over the press. And it was as simple as grooming his way into the police like he had done his whole life. He was always the helper, showing up on his scenes to find the victim when he, in fact, had done it. And so the whole intention was to set up the police also. So this, the police planning the blood and the police doing all this stuff, that didn't happen. But the serial killer was inside and did it all to lead that way. And that's what it looks like.
So what do you mean he was inside and he so the
well
police
he was working with he was an informant, correct?
Right. Edwards would groom his way into the searches for his own victims. He was a civil patrol expert. He went around the country teaching a first aid and civil patrol how he could help find bodies. And so the day the hours before they found Teresa's car, that was all done by volunteers at a church. And that's where Edwards always groomed his way into, was the church. And he would be the helper. Nobody would even think anything of it. He was 72 years old. He'd just be that nice old man that's given us some good advice.
There.
And do you think also then with the nephew as well? Because I know, unfortunately, you know, they make him out to be somebody who's a little slow and things, and it seemed like right away he said no, he had nothing to do with it. Then he said he did, and he talked about different things. And
that is a heartbreaking moment where
yeah,
he some of his testimony he talks about, They said, well, how did you come up with this? And he mentions a book that he read.
Yes.
And a friend of mine had read the book, and that scene is pretty much in there as he described. Jenny, we have to let you go, but you can continue listening. How about that, John?
Well, let me tell you, you know, when Steve got arrested and they didn't even know what happened because there really was no evidence that she'd been killed in the house or in the garage. They didn't know how she'd been killed. Then suddenly, a month later, they get this cryptic letter, and it's anonymous, and it's to the sheriff, and it details that she was killed by rope, by knife, by gun, by fire, burned in a kiln, and that's what Edwards did in all of his cases. And so they took the information and went after Brendan, because that letter has to somehow steer it to Brendan, because Brendan had gone over to the house that night. And so, boom, 4 months later, they bring in Brendan. They start pummeling him with this scenario.
16 years old. Mm-hmm. Obviously, yeah, they some him. Developmental issues. It's heartbreaking to watch it without lawyers present. I mean, there are just some things in there that cannot be explained how that happened.
Well, even when they bring Avery in, the detective questioning him says, come on, we know you did it. Just admit to it. We know that you've had a hard life, that you spent time in jail for a crime you didn't commit. We feel bad about that. But you obviously did this. I mean, they're leading him like crazy.
But he doesn't break.
He doesn't break.
A 16-year-old who is really... he is challenged, definitely. Yeah. I would break down. Yeah. I would say I did it just to stop the pressure.
Yeah. John, can I ask you, with Edward Wayne Edwards, you said that his modus operandi was to travel around the country. He would move from place to place. And I think you said with a wife and possibly even family, huh? Is that possible?
Yeah, he actually had, you know, he was married 43 years when he finally got caught in 2009.
So how does she not know that that was going on? Is it possible to live with somebody for that long and not know they had a hobby like that?
Well, you know, he was an evil man. He had stabbed his wife. He wouldn't let her go to the hospital. He repaired her. He controlled her. She was like the Stockholm Syndrome, basically, a kidnap victim for 43 years. If he put her up in a campground with the kids, they had a different name, and she didn't talk about it because he'd just kill her. And he had two previous wives and previous children back in the 50s when he was here in Montana and he killed. And that's exactly how he did it. He just portrayed himself as this great guy, family man, and used that as an alibi. But those poor people, all of his family members, had nothing to do with what this guy did.
It's sort of similar to Holmes from Devil in the White City. There's a lot of parallels. Are you seeing that too?
You know, there are so many parallels to Ed Edwards, because what he would do is base his murders and his setups on the seven deadly sins. He would go after people that might be cheating on their wives or maybe have some burglary convictions or who are going to church claiming they're really holy and then they're not. It was all based on the occult from the very beginning, because he was so destroyed in a Catholic orphanage by age 5 and 6 that he just came out a sadomasochist by the age of 12, creating crimes of recognition and setting people up.
You need to, you. I'm sure you already know this, but you need to sell this to Hollywood. This needs to be a movie.
You know what's funny about Ed Edwards? Not funny, but all of his murders are already turned into movies, because he created myths. He created mysteria and things that didn't seem plausible, and they were all made into movies, and everybody wondered, who did it? Who is he? That was really part of his MO, too, was to be that mystical guy.
Like that movie Seven, really, does that have anything to do? Because as soon as you said that's the first movie I thought of.
That's exactly what he did. He would kill for the seven deadly sins.
And how many films or television shows have we seen where whoever's organizing the search party to go through the forest and try to find the body, that's the guy who did it? We see that 1,000 times.
Well, that's what's making a murderer, too. There are people that were operating a search party for poor Teresa Halbach and admitted in court that they erased some messages because they knew the password. There were two people, a former boyfriend and a roommate. Why were they not questioned?
Well, they were actually questioned extensively about that cell phone incident, because Edwards had actually used other victims' cell phones after Halbach's murder in three different occasions, 2008, 2009. He would steal their cell phones. He would go into them. He would erase messages. He would send messages. Jeez. He would break into their email accounts, their Facebook pages, and direct the evidence to the guilty, the one he wants to get. So the phone thing with those guys isn't unusual, and people are trying to, you know, put them as the guys that killed Teresa Halbach.
But well, we're seeing one side of it from the filmmakers, and so I didn't know they were investigated, because what you're seeing is them, oh, okay, you erased a message, sure, go ahead, that's fine now, you know? So we are seeing a one-sided view, but John, listen, let's keep in touch, and if anything comes up with this cryptic letter that you just received, and I know they're not talking to you in Manitowoc because they don't maybe want to admit that there was someone else guilty for Stephen Avery's crime. But please keep in touch with us. And in the meantime, we will keep in touch with you by going to coldcasecameron.com. John Cameron, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Wow. How about that?
This is some heavy, heavy stuff, man.
I think so. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Steve's got the news for you next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Hey, Mike. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
And Mike.
And Mike is stepping in.
How is Mike, I wonder?
Mike's doing all right.
I'm not asking. Never, I don't really care that much, quite honestly.
My calls.
We're at 312-981-7200. You can call us or text us, or like Mike does, just stop by if you're in the neighborhood. We'd love to see you.
We have some texts coming our way. And again, I feel bad having people tune out, but, you know, I can't wait for people to watch stuff.
No, I get that. And I know.
Seriously.
It goes against the grain of radio to tell people, hey, we're on doing a show for you, but go elsewhere. But I think in this case, if somebody's just getting started with the show and wants to know what happens by watching it, you did the right thing. So good.
All right.
Come back, everybody. Mike came back. You should all come back.
Someone wants to know, we were talking about Stephen Avery, and the man we spoke to, John Cameron. Edward Wayne Edwards is the serial killer. His book is It's Me, Edward Wayne Edwards. Hello, Eddie Wayne Ed.
That's what serial killers do. They're very cordial. They introduce themselves, and then they kill you.
I know, because this man, John Cameron, was saying how he had several families and several children and would travel. And it's just, this is the serial killer you've never heard of. That's the name of the book. You can go to coldcasecameron.com. And it's funny, Bill, because you said something to me off the air, which is being echoed in a text message right now.
Feel free. Read the text.
312-981-7200. How come so many serial killers have the middle name of Wayne?
Here's what, now this, you know this already. This is very close to me. My middle name is Wayne. And from the time I was a little kid, and I don't remember who it was at the time, but I saw somebody on the news who was a serial killer when I was like 5 or 6 years old, and their middle name was Wayne. And then a year or two later, there was another serial killer, and their middle name was Wayne. The most famous, of course, the infamous John Wayne Gacy. It's just like an automatic thing. If you have that middle name, there's something going on. And I was trying to figure out how many over the years have had that as a middle name. If you're a serial killer and the middle name is Wayne.
Was there Wayne Williams? Was Wayne Williams?
Wayne Williams was the Atlanta killer, right? During the Olympics.
Not during the Olympics. The 70s.
Oh, during the 70s. During the 70s. That was Wayne Williams. But I think his first name, that was his first name, not his middle name. Unless it was Wayne Williams, in which case you could understand why he was so upset.
I'm telling you, every time this comes up, I know someone named Scott.
I know.
But this Edward Wayne Edwards, it's the Wayne that pushes him over to, so I'm waiting for you to snap.
There's something, it's going to happen. It's going to definitely happen. But there is something, I don't know what it is. Why would so many serial killers have Wayne as a middle name?
Well, it's not just serial killers either, because, you know, News of the Weird, Chuck Shepard. He lists a whole slew of people who have been convicted of something.
Yeah.
Killing.
Yeah.
And they all have middle names Wayne.
Yeah.
I'm
not shocked at all.
And this is from 2004, so there's probably, I don't know,
there's probably been
200
many more
names.
Since. Wait, is there 200 names on that list?
Look at this list, Bill. These are all convicted killers. As I scroll down, am I scrolling down?
It's easily 200 names. Yeah.
I mean, there's only two in Illinois, but these are convicted killers with the middle name Wayne.
Yeah.
And some of the Billy Wayne Crane. That I could see. Billy Wayne Crane. Oh, excuse me. Alvin Wayne Crane.
Alvin Wayne Crane. Right. Billy Wayne Crane is fine.
Donald Wayne Darling II.
Yeah. And I want to remind everybody, please hold your applause until we get to the whole list.
I'm not reading all of them.
Please don't start to applaud yet. It wouldn't be fair to those at the end of the list.
George Wayne McBroom. Some of these people, I can tell why they've snapped.
Right.
William Wayne Leff.
No, that's not on there yet.
There's a William Wayne Wright.
Is there really?
Willie Wayne.
He's the opposite of me. He's my doppelganger.
There is just everyone.
So John Wayne Gacy's obviously on there because he's the most famous of the murdering Waynes. Is he on? He's got to be
not
on. He's not on there? Write his name in there.
I'm going to write it in. Kenny Wayne Shepherd?
He's a country singer.
Oh,
he didn't
sorry.
Kill anybody.
But yes, there.
So, he's had nights where he's killed. He's done some great shows, but he's not on that list.
I'll tell you right now, if somebody brings home a guy, like if you have a daughter, you do, you have two.
Yes.
If somebody brings home a guy and their middle name is Wayne, even though that's your name and you're good, you're a good Wayne middle name guy.
Believe me, I so subscribe to this theory. There's something going on. There can't be that many people who have the middle name Wayne that just go on murder sprees. This needs to be studied.
11 common traits of mass murderers and serial killers. Can we take a break and revisit this?
Sure.
Because that is going to be one of them.
It's got to be the number one.
Wayne. Billy Wayne.
Something's wrong. All right, we'll study this next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, we are coming off of talking to a guest who wrote a book about Edward Wayne Edwards, who is a serial killer you've never heard of.
Until now.
And might be the one who is somehow involved in making a murder. That's all I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
We were mentioning that Wayne was a common name amongst serial killers.
The most common, by far.
Sure
over
seems
200 on a list.
Of convicted killers.
Yeah.
And Kenny Wayne Shepherd, somebody said you should be ashamed. He's not a country guitarist and songwriter. He's a blues.
Oh, he is a blues
we know that.
Musician. I'm sorry.
And you're right. He does kill it on guitar.
Doesn't he?
We had him in the studio.
Twice.
Yeah.
Very talented.
And he was like 12 at the time. He's yeah. pretty amazing.
I think he's married to one of Mel Gibson's daughters.
I think you're right.
I'm pretty sure he is.
Bill, you are now under surveillance since your middle name is Wayne.
That would be right. I would welcome that. It's with good cause.
And someone, Wendy, cough twice if you're being held there under duress. I lost it. Too many.
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't understand why there is some sort of correlation, but there is. If you're a mass murderer, more than likely your middle name is going to be Wayne.
Well, common traits of mass murderers and serial killers. Statistically speaking, the average serial killer is a white male from lower to middle class upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, over 90% of serial killers are men.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does it say anywhere that Donald Trump would keep Waynes from coming into the country?
No.
I wonder.
I'll email this to him. Most serial killers.
Waynes love me. They love me. Waynes love me.
I could shoot a Wayne, and the other Waynes would still vote for me.
Yeah, they love me.
Most serial killers are in their 20s or 30s. I always thought them to be older.
That's a tough one. I imagine it's case by case.
Well, these are the majority. Most mass murderers are single or divorced.
Yeah.
As children, soon-to-be serial killers often torture animals. That's
that,
been brought
we hear
up.
That all the time, don't
and Stephen we? Avery did not like cats or a particular cat.
They
it was the family
incident.
Cat.
Right, right.
Boy, that's bad. When it's your own
that's
family
why,
cat.
I've told you about that kid I know. There's a kid in my neighborhood that I always say to my wife, this kid has a bad future ahead of him. He's done weird stuff to animals in the neighborhood.
Like killing them?
I don't know that he's killed them, but he's throwing rocks at them and stuff and chasing them and that kind of stuff. That scares me. I'm not a pet guy, but I would never harm
well, you
an animal.
Hurt anything.
Ever, never.
And you know, you're getting a bad rap too. It's not that you hate animals. You just don't want animals sharing your dwelling with
right,
you.
Right. But
except for the rabbit.
I like them in the wild.
This is interesting. More than 60% of serial killers wet the bed beyond the age of 12. I could have been a serial killer.
Don't give up. Don't give up on your dream. I wonder what the tie-in is there. I wonder why
isn't
that
fascinating?
Yeah,
anger.
I wonder why, is that what it is? Is it anger?
I would be
no.
angry.
Oh, they're angry. I thought you meant that's why they wet the bed.
No.
But yeah, that's true. They were probably teased, and it was always that house that had the mattress out in front that was soaked through yellow.
Yeah, The Loneliest Runner. Remember that Michael Landon movie? Wasn't that
yes,
tragic?
I do.
That, I mean, I know there's been made-for-TV movies about much sadder events, but I'll never forget watching that kid come home from school and see his sheets and
being hung on the... It was like the Scarlet Letter. All those.
Oh, how
this
sad.
This was the, you know,
yep.
Yellow letter.
Right.
A lot of serial killers come from dysfunctional families with an absent father.
I can see that.
Many serial killers suffered through childhood abuse, which puts Bertrand in the running for Wright. No, 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 not to be one,
not to
but
be
because
one.
They're angry,
Let's
wetting
just
the bed,
that
and
tape right there.
Well, you were correct in your assumption of they're angry. They're wetting the bed, and many serial killers suffered through childhood abuse. That might be why they're wet in the bed, too. It all kind of comes full circle here. Serial killers often have a history of attempted suicide.
Oh.
Mass murderers are often loners who have very few social connections. And
see, that's one that we kind of knew, didn't we? That's not a surprise to you, is it?
And according to the A to Z Encyclopedia of Serial Killers, my birthday's next month.
Uh-huh.
I would like that book.
I know what you're getting.
Many serial killers are obsessed with starting fires.
Hmm.
Many mass murderers and serial killers have an extraordinarily high IQ.
They would have to, or they'd get caught after the first
one.
You're
right.
Wouldn't they?
For instance, the Unabomber, genius.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can I reveal this about the Unabomber? Is that all right, or should we wait? I almost said a fun fact about the Unabomber, which is inaccurate. We don't have any fun facts
no, go
about
ahead.
The Unabomber. It's the anniversary of the Unabomber, and we're trying our best to get his brother on, Ted Kaczynski's brother on. His brother's the one who turned Ted Kaczynski in.
So I would do
it. He's just written a book, and we're in talks to have him on the show very soon.
I would love to have him. And, I mean, that's your duty. I know it's a family member, but it's
right.
Something that is please. Catastrophic.
Wendy, I've turned my brother in
I
for
know,
crimes
he didn't
that
even
he didn't
do it.
Commit. I call the cops all the time. I say, I'd take a look at my brother.
They have a new Netflix series, not making a murderer, but making a thief. And you have falsely accused your brother of many
several
things.
Crimes. He hasn't committed any of them. But I have had to have, I've tried my best to have him incarcerated for these crimes. We'll see what happens. So
and the first
out.
Question I have for the Unabomber's brother, was it Ted Kaczynski?
Yeah, Ted Kaczynski.
His brother, I don't know his name.
Ted Kaczynski's brother. That's what he wants to be called when we have him on.
David?
Is it David Kaczynski? Yeah.
I want to ask
and
him.
Peggy Kaczynski's going to come on too. See what she knows about this.
We should do the interview in the Kaczynski building.
Right.
I want to know why the artist's rendering of him looked like Weird Al Yankovic wearing a hoodie. Did it not? It was curly hair.
I swear,
Ted Kaczynski does not have curly hair. Ted Kaczynski looked more like a disheveled Harrison Ford than Weird Al wearing a hoodie.
You couldn't have had a worse artist rendering ever. I mean, it's
ever.
Impossible.
It How looked, did they catch him because of that? Because of his brother, thank God.
Weird Al was in jail for 6 weeks. They thought Weird Al was doing it.
Making of a, what is Weird Al? A song?
Son Paradis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Doesn't have a ring to it.
No, it's not the same. It's not as good. All right, here's the game plan. A quick break, Steve with the news, and then more show coming your way next. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. You know what Wayne we left out when talking about bad Waynes? In the Wonder Years, Fred Savage's brother Wayne was always causing trouble.
He was mean.
Always causing trouble.
Bully.
And that was his first name, Wayne.
Somebody said Little Wayne.
Lil Wayne is...
I'm sorry, Lil.
L-I-L apostrophe Wayne, Lil Wayne.
Glad Bill corrected you there.
Lil Thank Wayne.
You. Was it Lil Jinx or Little Jinx?
Lil Jinx.
Okay.
And Lil Debbie. For some reason, if your name is Little at the
She's
beginning...
She's in the crew, Lil Debbie. She's
Lil
in
Debbie.
Same crew.
It is Lil Debbie?
Lil Debbie, yeah.
That's tough to say. Your tongue looked funny
but
when you said it.
Worth it, but so worth it. Earlier in the show, we were telling you about Amy Schumer... Here's just a very brief rundown of what's going on with Amy Schumer, and then
hello.
People, this is the friendliest studio. People just pop their head in,
was
say
that squeaky?
Hello.
No, that went through my brain the whole weekend.
Yeah,
hello,
Squiggy singing songs with performers. All right, Amy Schumer, of course, one of our finest comics, and having the year that if you're in comedy, you dream about. She had a hit movie. She hosted Saturday Night Live. She's got a television show everybody's talking about. Her stand-up shows are sold out nationwide.
Not anymore.
People love Amy Schumer. Well, I think they still will be.
I don't think they should be.
A little over a week ago, it came out that several comics who I have to say aren't as well known as she is, as Amy Schumer is. You have Wendy Liebman. You have, I'm trying to remember who else was involved in this, Kathleen Madigan, Patrice O'Neill, who is no longer alive but was also involved in this, Tammy Pascatelli, who's going to be on our show next week, all kind of noticed that Amy Schumer has jokes incredibly similar to jokes that they've been doing for years. We wanted to play the audio for you, but we could not find it. It was on the internet, and then magically it was gone.
It was taken down.
It got pulled from the internet. Earlier this morning, Kevin found this. Many other comics have noticed that they had the same thing happen. Mark Maron, John Mulrooney, trying to think of who else, Kyle Cease. So there's a little bit of an epidemic of stand-up comics saying, hey, we've got these jokes that we've been doing, and now all of a sudden Amy Schumer is doing very similar material. We played you some audio because you didn't want to believe it, and after you heard the audio, what did you think?
I still am not 100% convinced. It's very similar,
right,
and it could be lifted, but I still believe funny people can come up with can we play the first couple?
Yeah, you want to do that?
Yeah.
Let's play a few of these. These are what you're going to hear is the original versions of some of these jokes and then Amy Schumer's version of the jokes, and they are eerily similar, and you'll also hear her kind of dispelling this, saying, I'm not stealing from anybody. Listen.
How's this? Oh, that's perfect. They can ring you up right over there.
Oh, this is a hard one to judge by, because this is from the TV show Mad TV from about 15 years ago. This is a scene they did with somebody buying clothes at a department store, and they're helped by an African-American salesperson. And then when they go to the front and they say, who helped you? They're a little afraid to say it was a black guy.
Right.
They don't
want to
say
girl.
That. So that was a scene that was on Mad TV about 15 years ago.
It was 15 years ago.
Yeah. And then they showed the same scene on Amy Schumer's show from about 2 years ago. And it's almost identical.
But that's stuff that has happened to us. Or if you're talking and you don't want to say, well, it was a black person.
Yeah.
Although we don't do a comedy special about it. But that idea has...
Right.
It's come...
But even to the point where there's a part in the old version of it on Mad TV where the person is trying to find a way to describe their salesperson without saying that they're black or African American, and they go, their favorite president would probably be Abraham Lincoln. And then in the Amy Schumer version, they go, they probably voted for Obama, which is a different joke.
Yeah, Abraham Lincoln's funnier.
But
do you want to know the truth?
It is.
Yes, it is funnier.
Yes, it is.
All right, well, that's too hard to explain, but we can, of course...
talk to you.
Sure.
All right, that's Amy or Dolly? Okay, sorry, right. I get confused. I understand Amy's stealing material.
Dolly McCarthy's stealing material. Everybody's stealing material now.
All right, this is Amy Schumer. We're not going to do that sketch because
we'll do the stand-up.
Yes.
All right, listen.
Maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I like it when the guy pays for sex. I mean that.
That's Wendy
I'm
Liebman.
I'm very old school. I think the guy should always pay on the first date for sex. And
that's Amy Schumer.
Blacking out is when you drink so much that your brain goes to sleep, but your body gets all Eye of the Tiger and soldiers on.
And I black out when I drink. Is that the worst? No, your mind goes to sleep, but your body's like, tonight is my night.
I performed a lot of private schools, I was telling you, a lot of religious schools. I wonder what goes on with religion. I never knew what to believe with that. I don't ever know what the Virgin Mary story, you know what I mean? Did God and Virgin Mary make Jesus? And I think the reason we don't know on that is because we didn't have Mari Povich back then doing the paternity test. And that would have been a fantastic episode, wouldn't it? Just Mari Povich and Virgin Mary sitting there.
I think that would be the best ever Mari Povich baby daddy show. Don't you? Amazing that would be. I think he can do it. He's got the power. Like, half the crowd would be priests, half rabbis, and the panels, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph.
All right, you can stop it there, Kevin. All right, so what you heard there was three comics. You heard Wendy Liebman,
Who I remember after hearing that joke.
Oh, yeah.
I remember
She's very
that
funny.
From a long time ago.
John Mulaney and then Kyle Cease, all with not just jokes, but the jokes go in a certain way, and her way follows that way. And again, I agree with you. Anyone, it's very possible that there's two people on the planet who think of the same thing, but within a couple of weeks, we've had several comics say...
Got me questioning this. And her sister is her head writer, and she works with her. And, you know, it would be wild if it's the sister who's kind of lifting this material.
Sure.
And Amy gets blamed for it.
Right.
And I said, it's like if my sister was writing material for me.
And she does. You can cop to that now. Most of the stuff
she
said.
She wants to take me down.
Yeah, she does.
So she was doing it intentionally.
Yeah, I think so. That's the difference.
I don't think Amy Schumer's sister wants to get Amy in trouble,
no.
Wants to boost her up, because then the sister makes more money.
Right.
And if you got that, Betsy, you'd write me good stuff.
Right.
There are other comics, because you said this is kind of a common thing. You've been in stand-up. You did it for 10 years. You know a lot of stand-up comedians. I have never heard about this thing, really.
There were some people that were working and working steadily and making a good living that everybody in the stand-up community knew was lifting material, was stealing material. There were a couple people that just, it was as obvious as could be.
I have six of them. Can we explore this after a quick break?
Yeah. We're all for it. All right. Come back. We'll be back with you. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, Bill. Amy Schumer, we had a caller who had to hang up, but 312-981-7200 saying I'm being too kind. She definitely lifted this material.
None of us want to believe that Amy Schumer is stealing jokes. She's incredibly talented, really good at what she does. There's no reason for her to.
But no, she's not if she's stealing jokes.
Yeah.
I was telling you this off the air. Part of her charm was it was really great that you have this woman who has come sort of out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be your hot, sexy, traditional hot and sexy woman. I think she's very attractive, and I don't have a problem with her. But it was just like this every woman who achieved greatness and got so burning so bright so quickly.
Yeah.
And that's what was cool. But if she's using material from other people to get a head start or a leap on someone,
right,
then
it's a problem.
Like Roseanne Barr, I brought this up too.
Yeah,
you know what? She wasn't your hot babe. She wasn't.
Right.
She was very funny to me.
Right.
And she didn't have a great upbringing. Very Midwestern, wasn't it?
Yeah, she's from Minnesota.
And she had one of the best shows on television, the Roseanne
Easily.
Show. She was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I was proud of her. It's like, oh, good. I'd like to see that happen to somebody. Amy Schumer was like, that's happening. She's pulling a Roseanne.
That's why I think you and I don't want to believe that this could be true, is we were in a corner and we wanted to see this ascent to fame. And I mean, really, I don't remember.
It's a great success story.
It's a tremendous success story. I don't remember anybody in stand-up having this kind of breakout year where a year ago, if you said that name, people go, I don't know who Amy Schumer is. And then all of a sudden she was everywhere doing all the great work that she did. But then this happens.
But see, then it goes, is she a millennial? Because I would go.
I think she's just a little too old to be.
Damn.
I think.
Because it's like everybody, because they don't work hard.
Right. Slackers.
I mean, you started in stand-up. You worked every weekend.
Right.
I did radio. I worked every weekend and every holiday.
Not these kids today. Look in the producer's booth. Look at Kevin. He's sleeping. He's taking a nap right now. Just taking a nap. Look at him.
All right. Well, there are some comedians that I would not be aware of, but wow, Susie's aware of. I wonder if she's a former stand-up too. Hi, Susie.
Hi. How are you? I love your show. I'm driving right now. I have a couple of viewpoints. I have a daughter-in-law that's a comedy writer. She works for the Upright Citizens Brigade in L.A., and she also writes for Funny or Die.
Both
now,
great, great
Good
establishments.
For her.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's amazing. I mean, she just did something with Robert De Niro and Zac Efron. I mean, she wrote it.
Bad Grandpa?
No, she didn't do it. It's a takeoff from, but they actually performed and acted her video. It's under, can I say her name?
Yeah, if it's cool with her.
Courtney Davis. I mean, she's married to my son, different last name than my son.
Yeah.
He's also a writer, but writes for TV, but... My point is, growing up, my parents watched Milton Berle, and they used to. And he was famous for stealing jokes from all the comedians of his era.
Yes.
And then he, you know, it was wildly successful. He had TV shows. In comedy, I don't see how anything in life is highly original. Even Pablo Picasso is an artist. Even though he did cubism and all these different, you know, pink period, blue period, all, they all took from each other. Now, it's how it's done. Now, if they outright steal, just like even music, you know, there's so many similar sounds and tunes and all that, that things, you know, they're all accusing each other of stealing. How original can every single stand-up comedian be? Maybe it's his delivery. If it's verbatim, then it's stealing, absolutely. But if it's not, I don't buy it.
It's hard to judge. And I mean, seriously, I know you listen to My Sweet Lord from George Harrison, and he's so fine from the Chiffons. Yeah, it's similar, but I wouldn't have awarded the money to the Chiffons on that one.
Mm-hmm.
You do pick up things from other people. Bill's giving me a look, and would know you're in stand-up.
In music, they call it sampling.
But do people want to bring her down because she's so successful? I mean,
if she's stealing,
I mean, if she's really outright stealing, then it's not good, and I don't respect that then. And, you know, she's earning fame where she shouldn't. But it has to be totally proven that it's a ripoff.
Well, that's what we're all trying to determine. Yeah. We don't know yet. We're trying our best to figure that out because we don't want to believe it's true. But, boy, the last couple of weeks we've heard 12, 15 bits where you just go, oh, man, is that close.
Susie, thank you so much and good luck to your son and your daughter-in-law. And it's funny that Susie mentioned Milton Berle because he's on the top of this list.
Milton Berle for years and years was the guy that everybody goes,
really?
That guy. And he used to joke about it all the time.
He said, according to the Mental Floss, the late great star of stage, screen, radio, once the nation's most popular comedian, earning him a 30-year television contract. He was known as Uncle Milty, but to many of his fellow performers, Berle became known by the much less affectionate nickname, the Thief of Bad Gag,
yep,
for his legendary penchant for joke lifting. He, occasional enemy Bob Hope once remarked that Berle never heard a joke he didn't steal. In another instance, Jack Benny defended his own practices of using Berle's material by saying, when you take a joke away from Milton Berle, it's not stealing, it's repossessing. I didn't know this was going on. And then Berle never went out of his way to dispel the reputation. He once joked to Larry King, I don't steal people's jokes, I just find them before they're lost.
How about that?
So he's admitting it.
He did admit it, and he used to make... It's the weirdest thing because he was at the top of the game. I mean, he sold television sets. People didn't want to buy TV sets until Milton Berle was on, and then everybody went, we really got to get a TV set to see Milton Berle. But yeah, he was stealing jokes. I have to say this. You know how much I love Johnny Carson. I idolize Johnny Carson. Johnny Carson was stealing from Jonathan Winters all the time. His characters that he would do, like Aunt Blabby and stuff like that, those were just revamps of Jonathan Winter bits. Winters bits all the time.
Listen to the radio. Everybody does, you know, everybody does the same bits.
I know they do, and they shouldn't.
They just name them something.
They should.
Talking headlines, news, or ruse. It's the same thing.
It's terrible. By the way, animal stories tomorrow at this time.
Carlos Mencia, who you've mentioned, and the former star of Comedy Central's Mind of Mencia, has been plagiarizing everyone from George Lopez, who once claimed he roughed up Mencia over a supposedly stolen set, to South Park. However, the most famous example was shared with the world thanks to a viral video posted Joe Rogan. In the footage, Rogan is shown running on stage to confront Mencia during a 2007 performance at the Comedy Store in L.A., and among other more colorful names, Joe Rogan refers to Mencia as Mencilia. Now, I don't even know who Carlos Mencia is. I've seen his name.
Carlos Mencia was probably at his most popular 5 to 10 years ago with that show, The Mind of Mencia. He was the next George Lopez.
And was stealing
quite liberally. And it's sad because he's a very funny, sharp-witted guy. But if you'd see his set and you knew about stand-up, you'd go, I've heard that before. I've heard that before. I've heard that before. He was just stealing all the time.
And we don't have time to play this, but there's a Bill Cosby, Carlos Mencia bit that is similar.
Yeah.
So you can go to Mental Floss. Dane Cook.
Thief.
reached the pinnacle of stand-up comedy success 2005 when his album Retaliation went all the way to number 4 on Billboard's chart, sold out large arena gigs, movie flops, tabloid coverage quickly followed, and served to fuel a rabid anti-Dane movement within the comedy world. With that came an intense microscope on Cook's material and predictably a rash of joke swiping charges.
Yeah.
Most well-known example includes a Cook bit that bears a suspicious resemblance to an earlier one by Louis C.K.
Yeah, he remember last week when these first charges came up against Amy Schumer, I mentioned three names to you. I mentioned Carlos Mencia, I mentioned Dane Cook, and I hate to say it, but Robin Williams.
He's
also
next on
is
the
is
list.
Is he on the list? Yeah.
And there is Robin Williams' crazy first appearance on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show, which is a part of this video. You can go to Mental Floss. Long before he was an Oscar winner, Robin Williams was known to comics as a major material thief. Really?
I can't tell you how many guys that I worked with over the years, over the 10 years, that would say, when Robin Williams comes into a club, we all get an alert saying, careful what you're saying, because he's watching you, and he'll take it, and then he'll do it on a national television show, and then from then on, anyone who sees it will go, hey, you stole that from Robin Williams.
This thing in question, he was even alleged to have used other comedians' material on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show. One well-traveled anecdote claims that when fellow comics spotted Williams in the audience of a comedy club, they'd immediately stop their act to prevent him from writing down their best jokes. Richard Zoglin did a book, Comedy at the Edge. In this book, David Brenner once asked Williams' agent to tell Robin, if he ever takes one more line from me, I will rip his leg off and shove it up his butt. But he said a different word.
I interviewed David Brenner at the last radio station that you and I both worked at, and I brought that up because I didn't know exactly the wording on it, but I knew that he had had a run-in with Robin Williams, and he just said, I can't even tell you how many jokes over the years. Robin Williams just, he hears me do them, you see the light bulb, and then he does
really?
Them from then on. And I told you Robin Williams would then do a thing for years. I used to hear this all the time. Guys would come up and they'd say, hey, that thing I do about motorcycles, and he would nod and take out his checkbook and write a check and hand them a check for $1,000. Like he was just going, you caught me. I'm sorry. Here's compensation.
Jay Moore is also listed as a thief, but he's an admitted comedy plagiarist. In his 2004 book, Gasping for Airtime, which recounts his tumultuous two-season stint on Saturday Night Live, he was there was a terrible cast, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was a featured player on SNL, yeah. Never one of the main cast members.
Well, he details an infamous incident in which he took a New York comedian's joke and turned it into a sketch. NBC was forced to settle with the joke's originator, but Moore himself escaped any serious repercussions.
Yeah.
Does that make it any better?
No.
But then didn't he stop doing stand-up and was doing, like, was it Sports Night? Was that his show?
He's done a bunch of different things. He's back doing stand-up again.
Because he was pretty good on the TV shows, surprisingly.
He's been in a bunch of movies. He was in Jerry Maguire.
He's
pretty talented.
All right, and finally, a guy who I adore more than anything, Dennis Leary.
Yeah, Now, that's a tough one, because I've heard these. Go ahead.
All right, here's what they say. Former star of Rescue Me has been accused of stealing not only some material, but his entire stage persona from the late cult comic Bill Hicks. There's a lot of similarity.
There is a lot of similarity.
But is that inspiration or similarity, or stealing? I mean, there are people who, I don't know. He's also been accused of lifting material from former stand-up and Hollywood heavyweight Judd Apatow and Louis C.K., but Hicks himself, who was close friends with Leary, severed his friendship with him over the number of lifted jokes on Leary's No Cure for Cancer album. And then Hicks joked with Austin Comedy News in 1993. He says, I have a scoop for you. I stole his act. I camouflaged it with punchlines. And to really throw people off, I did it before he did. Hicks passed away from cancer the following year.
Yeah. Hmm.
Bill Hicks was really funny. I don't know. I see similarities, but I don't see like the exact same thing. But I don't know Bill Hicks' whole material, you know, his whole catalog of jokes.
There is a very similar point of view and attitude that you wonder if Dennis Leary would have formed on his own had he not been so influenced by Bill Hicks. But again, is that more influence or is that more stolen? I don't know. Somewhere in the middle. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick
break. Guard your material.
Guard your material
at
all
costs. Don't put it on the internet.
Right.
Seriously, with the internet now, everybody's going to be stealing everybody's stuff.
I know. That's what's happening. We'll find out what Roe and Anna have next.
It's Bill
and Wendy. We're going to steal whatever they have next. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.